from the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening and or good morning wherever you may be across this green land of ours. Coming up tonight, Ghost to Ghost AM. Nothing but ghost stories all night long, with the exception of what we're going to do here in a moment. Because there is news from Peter Davenport at the National UFO Recording Center in Seattle, Washington. So we will do that, and then we will proceed with the balance of the night in nothing but ghost stories. As promised by popular request, one more night of Ghost to Ghost. So that's all directly ahead. Don't move. Well, all right. Here he comes, one more time, with me, Peter Davenport, who runs the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, takes hotline calls when stuff is happening like now, and takes online reports when it's happened, you know, a little while ago, or in the future. Here's Peter Davenport. Peter.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening.
As always, good evening. It's great to be here tonight. You know, before the program, I was sort of mentally scrolling through the many, many programs we've done together. I think we've done quite a number of really interesting programs.
Been a few.
We certainly have, and tonight's program, I think, will be no exception. We're running short of time, or we don't have a lot of time tonight. I don't want to keep those ghosts waiting at the bottom of the hour. What I would like to do is give a short preface. We've got two guests who are standing by, I know, and I'm anxious to hear them tell in their own words what they saw over Clearfield, Utah. That's just south of Ogden, just north of Salt Lake City, and just east of the Great Salt Lake. This was Thursday night, last week, the 20th of April, year 2000. They saw something that is astonishing. And part of the reason I thought I would like to feature this case and sort of close out a long string on Coast to Coast with this one is because we have heard this type of story before. We have time tonight, of course, to do only one story, but we have heard this type of report recently on several occasions, and our guests tell it so well that I thought...
You know, two witnesses, Peter, are always good.
Yes, they are.
To the same event.
These are good witnesses, and I will leave it to our audience to judge for themselves the merits, the qualifications of our two guests tonight. With that being said, let me just add that they saw not one object, they saw five clusters of objects, reportedly, streak over their heads, going from almost from horizon to horizon in a matter of a few seconds. This, by any measure at all, is unusual. And they saw five of them in rapid sequence. The next night, we don't have time to deal with this report, but the next night, something similar was seen over Green Bay, Wisconsin. So with that, Art, why don't we just go to our two guests?
Okay, we have Debbie and we have Jen, and first we have Debbie. Debbie, hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
So you're up in Utah.
Yes, I am.
All right, Deb, what did you see?
Well, I had been at my friend Jen's house watching a movie, and it was time to go home. And we walked out of her condo into the parking lot, and as soon as we stepped outside, we could see what we thought was a flock of geese flying overhead.
Mm-hmm.
And Jen pointed at him and said, oh, look, you know, some geese. And when we looked at him for a few seconds, we realized it was dark outside, the moon was not up, and geese do not glow.
Well, maybe we better have both of you in here at the same time. Jennifer, is that roughly what you said?
Yes, I pictured them as being illuminated geese.
Illuminated geese.
Yes, and they were just directly above our heads, flying in a V shape, a chevron shape.
Right.
And so they, we didn't have a lot of time to comment.
When you say illuminated geese, when you really looked at them, this is for both of you. Was there finally any question that these were or were not geese?
Oh, there was no question at all.
Not geese.
Within the matter of a second or two, we knew they were not geese, and they were traveling so fast and just staying in such a tight formation, and there were 7 lights.
What about jet planes?
No. There were actually planes in the sky that we could see flying, and we've seen a lot of jets, and this was just too fast, and there was no noise.
No noise.
No noise.
How about contrails?
No.
No contrails.
These were very distinct lights. There, you could tell, we could count them. You know, they were separate lights.
Right.
And we watched them as they traveled, you know, across the sky and watched them go out of sight.
How much of a shape could you finally discern as opposed to a goose?
That was kind of hard because we could see the light very distinctly, and it was almost like there were independent lights.
Okay.
But at the same time, we kept looking to see what they were attached to, but we couldn't see anything. But they just gave the impression.
Okay, roughly what time was this again, local time there?
9:30 in the evening.
9:30. All right. So it was already obviously dark.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. And the moon had not come up yet.
All right.
There was about a 15-second interval as they went from, it was primarily south to north before the second group came.
A second group?
Yes. And we saw them about 35 degrees off of the horizon. And they came about an 80-degree angle from where we were standing. And we spent the time analyzing searchlights, as Debbie said, geese. We tried to compare them with the airplanes flying in the area, as she said, to
right.
eliminate that. And watched them just actually cruise above our heads.
I know it's almost impossible to estimate, but if you had to guess, how high up were they compared to the jet planes that were flying?
They seemed to me, I perceived them as being lower.
As lower?
Yeah.
I did too.
Yeah, they seemed to be really quite a bit lower. That's why I think they too impressed us as being more like geese, like the height geese would fly.
Oh, okay. I've got you. Sure.
Yeah. And when we saw the second set come over of the seven, then we thought, is this circling?
Well, I'm trying to sit here thinking, wondering, well, did they really see geese? Doesn't sound like it.
No, definitely not geese.
No, we eliminated geese in about the first 3 seconds because seeing illuminated geese, it was the formation that reminded us
of geese. Yes, I understand.
Right.
And there's no way it could have been jet planes.
No. They were flying much faster.
They were
very close together.
All right. To you, were they, obviously there was enough of a light for you to discern some kind of shape?
Well, there were seven lights in the V shape, three on each side, one in the front. And it just seemed as if they were attached to something, but we really, it was like you couldn't see it. You perceived that it was there, but you couldn't see.
So it could have been seven lights attached to one single object.
Yes. I termed them headlights. Only way I could think of to
headlights?
Describe them.
Headlights?
Headlights.
Well, that's in a V shape.
Right.
Yeah, they were, what she's saying is that she seemed like they were attached to the front of something.
Yes, that there was an object, that there were headlights on the front of something, and in a V shape. And much to our surprise, we waited about another 15 seconds.
Well, probably 45 seconds.
Yeah, and they came in succession, about 15 seconds apart.
Sounds like Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Well,
coming around the mountain when she comes.
It was really funny, but you know that was how it seemed to be, and it reminded me almost of like Tinkerbell from Peter Pan with these.
Really? Really?
Yeah, these lights just zooming across, and when we were talking about them circling, we were standing there going, "It's got to be UFO," and we were saying, "Well, maybe it's just circling around," and then the next set came, and there were only three.
And
so then we knew
that it wasn't circling.
Yeah. And they all traveled the next set. By then, we were just goosebumps from head to toe.
Well, we began shaking about that point. It wasn't just goosebumps.
That was goosebumps, you said, right? Goosebumps.
Yeah. Yeah, good pun.
Indeed. Well,
Then the next set that came across was a set of 14 lights.
14 lights.
And we both felt that these were... maybe two ships together because of the way that they were shaped.
It was more irregular than the others, but when we talked about it a couple of days later, we thought that possibly it was two sets of seven, one flying slightly above the other one.
Well, then here's a critical question. Did you ever see any of the lights, particularly in the irregular one, change position relative to the other one?
The set of 14 is a possibility, but to be really honest, with all the excitement of everything going on...
Hard to remember.
It is just really hard to just give you a really definite answer.
And, of course, you girls had low-light video cameras all set. And...
Oh, definitely.
Oh, we wish. Yeah, by then, we were just... Our chins... Our mouths were hanging open, and we could hardly even talk.
I know the experience.
And then what happened was we were anticipating it, and we were turning and facing in the direction they were coming from.
Like robots.
So you were waiting for the next set.
Oh, yes. And the final set was seven, another set of seven.
Another set of seven.
Flying in a V.
Holy smokes.
And that was the end of the show.
We waited for about 3 minutes outside just watching and waiting and shaking, and what do we do?
Boy, I hear that. Listen, what was it like between the two of you? I really like to ask this because my wife and I went through it. And so what was it like between the two of you after all this happened? Obviously, at some point, you went back inside and you sat down and talked about it.
Well, we were still standing outside, and we kept asking, what do we do? What are we going to do?
And we kept saying over and over again, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. That was our most common statement between the two of us, and commenting on what is it, trying to eliminate the possibilities of searchlight, of airplanes, of everything else as they kept flying over.
It's good that you sat there and went through that deductive reasoning.
Yes. Yes, we did. And seeing them just come, turning like robots, and seeing them come out of the horizon or almost out of a star or something was incredible.
Well, you were particularly lucky. Most people don't get that much of a show, you know, one after another after another. That's great. And so you really had an opportunity to observe.
Well, I think the thing that we were talking about afterwards that was the most profound for us was the silence. I lived on Beale Air Force Base and saw SR-71s flying in and out all of the time and thought they were the most beautiful flying objects I have ever seen. But this, Debbie and I were commenting on how graceful and how majestic these were, flying or cruising in their silence. And that's what impressed me the most about it, was just seeing them cruise across the sky as these, just in this graceful mode as though they had command of the universe. And that's what took me by surprise more than
anything else. Maybe they do. Maybe they do.
I think so.
Well, gee, have you ever seen anything like this before?
I never have.
Never.
Never? When you all heard stories about stuff like this, what did you used to think?
Well, my father was an aeronautical engineer in the space program, and I grew up with always a knowing of a possibility. And so I didn't doubt it at all, and I've never doubted it. But this experience was so incredible. It's still, you know, it's been 5 days, and I still have to keep reminding myself that it really happened.
And I feel the same way about it. like Debbie, I've had no problem accepting UFOs as being a fact. And for the last umpteen years, every trip I've taken at night, I've spent scanning the skies. And that's why when I stepped out of my condo and looked up, it was so natural for me to do that. And there it was.
You'd scan as you would. This was your first.
This was my first. I have never seen a UFO.
Well,
and coming back here tonight to be on the phone was just so strange. I haven't been back since the sighting, and standing in the parking lot and looking up.
Yes. Well, all I can say is welcome to the ever-growing club.
Yeah. We're proud to be members.
We sure are.
Debbie, Jen, thank you both so much, and you've had an experience that you will not forget for as long as you live.
Never.
Good
thank
night.
Thank you, Art. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, you bet. Good night, you two.
Great report. Thank you.
There it is,
good night.
Peter.
Wow. I thought our audience would like to hear us close off with that case, Art. It was dramatic. Five groups of light streaking overhead. One thing they didn't emphasize is they went almost from horizon to horizon in 5 to 10 seconds, estimated time. I'm going to be talking about this case and many others like it up in Vancouver, B.C. on the 6th of May, just about a week and a half from now at the planetarium up there.
Oh, really?
Also going to be showing that incredible videotape of the fireball going over Ontario after we did that program with Amy Hebert out of Texas.
Oh, what an incredible hunk of video.
Oh, it's I think it's the most dramatic video we have in our possession here at the National UFO Reporting Center. I'm going to be showing that and talking about many other cases. I think people will enjoy it. I hope they'll come and join us and see what we have.
Okay, where and when again, please?
It's going to be at the Planetarium in Vancouver, B.C., 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, the 6th of May, just about a week and a half from now, sponsored by the UFO BC group up there. And I'm looking forward to it tremendously. I think it's going to be a good program. But we have a lot of cases. What we've touched on, you know, just a general statement, Art, despite the many, many programs we've done, I think I've probably presented less than 1% or a fraction thereof of all the material we have up here. And where is the press? Where is our government?
All the people like Debbie and Jen, so many hundreds, thousands, even millions of people who have seen these things. Peter, what can I say? After all the years, my friend, thank you so very much.
It has been fun. Thank God for Coast to Coast and Art Bell. That's all I can say.
Good
it's
night,
been
Peter.
A great run. Good night.
Good night, my friend. There you have it. Two new initiates. All right, Ghost to Ghost is coming up next. Ghost stories only. Just a couple of things before we begin. One, I just took a webcam photograph of my wild cat, Comet. I have a wild cat. When I tell you that this cat is wild, I'm telling you this cat is as wild as any creature, large cat, you would encounter in an unexpected way on a mountain. Or maybe on the flats in Africa. I mean, this is a wild cat, folks. And if you look carefully at the picture on the webcam right now, there is no mistaking the wildness of the eyes. You can see what this cat is. It has become our friend. But to the rest of the world, it will always be a wild cat. And if you look carefully at it right now, you will see that wildness in those eyes. It's on my webcam. Now, I've got one thing I would like to read before we begin. This is I love stuff from a cop. I get a lot of ghost stories from cops, from policemen. By the way, I love cops on TV. We watch cops all the time. But here's a fax from a cop out there that I thought you should hear. Art, you know, I would like to have called in tonight, but I'm working the street. Your programs have been entertaining and enlightening over the years. I'm a police officer in Salina, Kansas. A few years back, I was on routine patrol, driving through the new construction area along the west side of the old Smoky River bed. It was a little foggy, and I took a new constructed street, newly constructed street. The street curves along an old bend in the river past an old homestead. The farm buildings are now long gone, but the evidence of the elevated construction site is still there. I was rounding the curve and noticed an old dog first, an old, tired-looking bloodhound. Then I saw the figure with a feed sickle, the type with the wooden handle and the curved blade. He was wearing an old bib overalls and a straw hat, tired old boots, a work shirt with sleeves cut out. It's cop for you, boy. They'll get that description right down. They were walking the opposite direction of the patrol unit. I was not real anxious to make contact with this individual because he looked angry. But due to thefts in the area, I made the U-turn in the grass and was back in a few seconds. Both he and the dog were gone. I got out, walked around, over the riverbank, no sign of them, no footprints, nothing. Now, I've worked this shift for 7 years. Nothing like this before. I've been in law enforcement for over 15 years, and I sure would like to know the truth behind this story. As a child in the city, we used to walk through that old homestead. There were the remains of an old two-story house and a barn that was falling down. Many kids in the area refused to go down there, stating the grounds were haunted. It never slowed me down a bit. It was just another interesting piece of dying history. But now, I wonder. That's from Glenn. Good morning, Glenn. There's your story. All right, here we go. Once again, I'm requesting of the audience no great goodbyes tonight, just ghost stories. That's what we're here for. That's what you're going to get. And if you are one who doubts that something survives when the human body gives out, then you'll be wanting to listen throughout the night tonight. It'll help you. First time caller line, you're on Ghost to Ghost AM. Good morning.
Hello, Art.
Hi there.
This is Marshall. I'm at Ground Zero, Bellevue, Nebraska.
All right, Marshall, you are going, Bellevue, huh? You're going to have to, that's the one they destroyed, right?
No, not yet.
In a movie, I meant. Listen, you're going to have to speak up good and loud for me. You're not
okay.
Too loud, Marshall. So
this a little better?
It's better, sir.
Okay. This happened over a period of, I'd say, 15 years. About 22 years ago, me and my wife got married, and we bought this place for my dad. It had four rental properties on it, okay?
All right.
Okay, then we had our first...
You mean four individual houses or something?
And two houses. One had one apartment, and the other house, big house, had three apartments in it.
Gotcha.
So we took the basement and the top middle floor and rented the top and the back.
Gotcha.
Okay. So we had our firstborn about a year later. Then we had another son about another year later.
Mm-hmm.
So when they were about five or six, they said, "Daddy, we can't sleep at night." They said, "Why?" I said, "There's an old man with a hat on, and he keeps looking through the window at us."
Oh, really?
And saying, "Oh, boy, we got a peeking Tom."
So you believe them?
I would believe them, you know. But the only problem is the window's about 20 foot off the ground.
That is a problem.
So I'm saying, these kids, you know, I don't think they're lying to me or nothing. So... And all through this time, we had, like, the train tracks. It was right behind my house, about 150 yards.
Yes, sir.
And we get these big, heavy grain trains, and they, what do you call it, shake the whole house. And we'd get glasses falling out of the cupboards and stuff, because they were old cupboards and everything like that, you know. So we didn't pay it much attention. So what happened is all of a sudden, I worked at that time for the railroad at night. My wife called me up one night, and she says, somebody was looking over her bed. A silhouette of a man. So she gently reached over and turned on the light, and poof, it was gone.
Now, you mean actually in the room?
in the room above her bed, right?
Above her bed.
Looking over her, an old man with a hat.
That's really bad.
Okay. As, you know, then we'd be like Saturday morning, we'd be sleeping in, and she says, oh, we better get up. Why? And I said, the kids are up. You can hear them walking around upstairs. You can hear the TV on.
Now, let me guess. You went into the kids' room, and there they were sleeping.
Sleeping.
The sleep
front door with a deadbolt.
Yeah.
Wide open, stereos on, TVs on.
Yeah. How could you live in a house like that?
Well, I thought it was all BS myself. Until my wife.
Up until now, it was your children and your wife.
Right.
Bad enough, but you hadn't seen anything.
Oh, I didn't see nothing. I just kind of pacified them. Yeah, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, this happened all through, you know, as they're growing up, okay?
This was over 15 years.
15 years. And see, what really happened, we started remodeling the house, and it started progressively getting worse.
Well, that's because you were making it angry. It was, you were changing what it was used to.
Oh, yeah, it was really getting angry. Towards the last, it started building fires, but I'll get to that.
Building fires?
Oh, yeah. I got a big wood burner downstairs, and throughout the summertime, what we would do, instead of taking it out the trash, I'd just stick it in the wood burner and run upstairs to put it in the garbage, right?
Right.
Well, all of a sudden, here it's summertime out, the wood burner's going. She asked me, why'd I start the fire? I didn't start the fire. She says, the wood burner's on. Because it's one of them that turn on and it blows heat throughout the whole house, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, we don't need, you know, it's 100 degrees outside. We don't need the furnace, you know, the wood burner.
I hear that, yes.
So anyway, my wife went to California with one of her girlfriends, seen a bunch of friends out there, and my grandma's took the two boys.
Right.
Okay. Here I am. I just, what do you call it, one of my days off, because I worked nights at that time. I just got into bed, and our basement was our master bedroom back then. And here, Lona, you know how it is when you're just kind of getting ready to doze off and everything. And here's a silhouette of a man with a hat on walking upstairs.
Walking upstairs.
Oh, walking right past me, probably 20 feet away. I'm going, whoa, there's somebody else in the house.
Oh, yeah, people sit and they listen to this, and it just sort of, they hear
it. Oh, this is honest God truth.
You cannot understand the terror when you've got a deadbolt and someone's in your house.
So I gently reach into the deal, grab my 9mm, cocked and loaded, and I'm searching the house.
Oh.
Is there somebody in here with me? I searched that whole house head to toe, and there's nothing there. And after that, I believed everything my wife and my kids told me. Because I'll tell you what, it's just frightening. It just makes your hair on the back of your
head. And you're saying that toward the end, as you were remodeling the house,
it started getting worse. So next door to me, there was a business there, and they made it into a bar. And his son was a deputy sheriff. And he got the word of this happenings going on around our house.
Right.
He said, well, let me do some investigating. Let me find if somebody got killed or murdered in your house. Okay.
Okay.
Well, what he found out was, across the street from me was this old abandoned house. As long as many years I've lived here, there's nobody ever there.
Right.
Okay. And the guy that lived there at that time walked across the street and got hit by a semi and killed instantly. And his buddy lived here. This is probably 30, 40 years before I lived here.
So you believe that house...
Well, now it's getting a little interesting after this. I also have an auto repair business here at my house.
Yes.
So what I do on the side. Well, anyway, one of my clients, she says, I got to talk to her about it. She says, my uncle lived across the street.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yes.
She says, yeah, he was the one that got killed out in the street. I says, oh, yeah? She says, next time I come down, I'll bring a photograph of him.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I knew his last name and everything after this. So here she brings this photograph to me. And here's this old man with this Dick Tracy hat. Just exactly what we've been seeing. So what I ended up doing is I just held the picture to my wife. You know this guy? And she freaked out. She said, that's the guy.
And the children?
Oh, they didn't really say too much about it. They seen the photograph and... But the hat, that's what it was like a Dick Tracy hat. That's what they recognized, the hat part.
Well, that's a very disturbing story.
So here's where it really gets interesting.
More? There's more?
Oh, yeah. How we got rid of the ghost is we start because the house across the street was so in disrepair. Nobody lived in there for 10 or 15 years. And before that, when I was a kid, it was still there. We ended up getting out after the city, and the city finally tore the house down.
Tore it down.
Then after the house was torn down, that was the end of the problems.
Huh. All right. Well, listen, bless your heart for telling that story. I say again, that's a very disturbing story. Because in trying to determine what a ghost is, whether it's some sort of endless remnant of a soul that has left, or it's actually the continued consciousness of a person who has passed away, there's really a big difference between the two. As you listen to these stories, there can be no doubt, and there will be no doubt if you continue to listen. The disturbing, edgy part of all this is imagining yourself as a soul, as a spirit, suddenly dead, but not gone. Still here, with attachment to something like a house, or an apartment, or a car, whatever it would be. Your soul, in essence, your everything that you are, trapped in this physical place. That's why I think that kind of story is so disturbing, because it makes one lean toward the local haunting aspect, the consciousness trapped, the spirit trapped. And that's a pretty damn frightening thought when you think it over. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is the Flatiron Arts Building in Chicago, Wicker Park neighborhood.
Well, how are you?
Oh, we're wonderful. We're wonderful. But we have two ghosts. But they're not, mind you, they're not frightening. And we believe here that these apparitions have traveled with our artists. We'll tell you two stories. One about an artist from Holland who is now here, and he brought his ghost with him.
Really?
Yes. One night he's working, as most artists do, at night. They do their creative best when it's the dark.
You bet.
And the ghost reappeared, and he hadn't seen this ghost for several years when he was in Holland. That's Amsterdam, Holland.
Right.
And it frightened him. He called me in the morning, and I said, well, hold on a second. We're not going to get rid of this ghost this way. Let's make him our friend. I said, paint him. So several nights later, the ghost reappeared.
Do what? Paint him?
Paint him on a canvas.
Okay.
He painted him on the canvas. The ghost has not bothered him except from time to time, but not on a frightening basis.
Maybe it liked the painting.
We're listening. And
now, if that had been an unflattering painting, your artist friend could be mush by now.
You're absolutely right. We hadn't thought about it. Now, mind you, this building was created in 1913, and it is in the neighborhood that was frequented by Nelson Algren, and it has its ups and its downs and so on. It's much like Paris was in 1925.
Yes.
We now have another artist who is from Japan. This is a young woman who attends the Art Institute of Chicago.
Gotcha.
And she is a Japanese citizen, although fluent in both languages. She has been followed by a ghost from her family farm in northern Japan.
Now, that's quite a trip.
Yes, it is. And we believe that not only ghosts inhabit a building, a neighborhood, but they follow the karma of the artists. And remember, you being a broadcaster, and we have performing artists, there's a sensitive nature to the artist.
Oh, we're all crazy.
Happily crazy. So this, and we don't, by the way, permit any lawyers or doctors in this building.
Well, there's some points for you.
Yes.
By the way.
So we, from the All Artist Building, wish you and all your 15 million listeners good luck.
Thank you very much, and I really particularly appreciate the story about the artist who painted.
Don't need to be unfriendly.
Who painted the ghost, and
yes,
apparently the ghost did like the painting. But
yes.
Again,
we encourage the apparitions. We encourage people from the other world.
I wonder if that's a good thing. Haven't you ever wondered whether in doing so you're trapping whoever it is?
No, we hadn't. We thought that we would give these wandering spirits a home and make them our friends.
Well, good luck to you, but listen, you be careful.
We shall.
All right.
Thank you so much.
That's the first one I've heard of an artist painting a ghost. I mean, you have to be real careful. With every brush you take, you'd have to be very careful, wouldn't you? We'll be right back.
From west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
There's only one thing we're doing tonight, ghost stories all night long. This is known as Ghost to Ghost, and all we want from you are serious ghost stories. That's what we've been getting, and that's what we're going to proceed with. Listen to this very briefly. The city of Achan, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, that's A-C-H-A-N, formerly one of Germany's perimeter cities, was reduced to a pile of rubble by Allied forces during World War II. Our unit, the U.S. Army 303rd Medium Maintenance Company, happened to be passing through the city in 1945. The war was still underway, and as expected, the atmosphere was very hostile. Looking for a place of comparative safety to bunk down, we located two intact adjoining rooms in what had previously been an apartment complex. The only object of interest in these rooms was a grandfather clock, which was not running. Unable to resist a challenge of this type, we managed to make the clock operative. As the rooms were small, we decided that six GIs sleep in each room. Sleep we did, until the clock struck 2 a.m. Now, I don't know what woke me, perhaps that clock. Within seconds, the wailing began, the most unearthly sound that I've ever heard. The wailing continued for approximately 8 to 10 minutes and then abruptly stopped. Silence prevailed, except the ticking of the clock. I positioned my rifle barrel in the direction of the door and held that position, anticipating the arrival of the sergeant of the guard. He was scheduled to wake up the relief guard at 4 a.m. Upon opening of the door and directing his flashlight into the room, he was greeted by six gun barrels pointing in his direction. He checked the second room and found the same condition existed. All the occupants were awake and heard the wailing. Neither the guard on duty nor anyone outside those two rooms heard the wailing. It was never determined what the source of the wailing was, but it was determined prudent to sleep elsewhere. All the way from World War II. We'll be right back. All right, here we go. We continue now with Ghost to Ghost AM, West of the Rockies. You are on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, this is Steve in San Francisco.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, I got a ghost story. I got to kind of set the stage for it a little bit. But
all right.
I bought this turn-of-the-century house that was kind of run down. Actually, it was owned by an old man and never used to see him. Everything used to be closed up, and my wife really liked the house, and so...
Is this in San Francisco?
It's just outside.
All right.
And so anyway, we saw somebody going up, or she did, going up to the house, and he, you know, was dressed in a suit, looked like a real estate agent, so she caught him, and he goes, yeah, the guy's going to sell the house, so... We ended up making an offer, and we bought the house, and we kept noticing it was really run down, had old wiring in it, and, you know, wasn't many lights. So it was really kind of a dark house anyway, and we used to feel like somebody was, you know, following us,
yeah.
And you'd turn around, and you'd get, like, a glimpse of something, you know, moving real quick away, but you never really saw it, so...
Corner of the eye kind of deal?
Yeah, kind of the corner of the eye, you know, kind of a shadow that would just kind of disappear.
Something you couldn't quite lay your eyes on, but was at the peripheral vision
right.
point.
Right, it always seemed to move faster than you could move, you know.
I'm with you.
And so we kept noticing, like the wife would set her necklace down, and she'd come in and go, well, you know, where's my necklace? And, you know, we'd look around, couldn't find it, we'd look everywhere. And then maybe 2 days later, it'd be laying right on the dresser where she left it. But we'd look there, and it wasn't there. You
Nobody
know?
In the house but yourself and your wife?
Well, we had kids, but, you know, we'd ask them, and they wouldn't know, and most likely they weren't touching, because we'd check in their room, and there was nothing ever there. It just
So it like, would disappear and reappear.
And reappear.
Uh-huh.
So I did some research on it, and the guy that built the house died of a brain hemorrhage about 3 years after he purchased the property.
Oh,
and from what
again.
The neighbors said, he was building it himself, and it was never really completed. So they never lived in there.
Boy, here we go again.
And, then it was purchased from that family by a madam. Who
A madam?
Yeah. She used it for her own house to entertain the sheriff and the mayor and that kind of people.
Old San Francisco.
And so, yeah. You know,
and by the way, I'll bet not much has changed.
Yeah, and it was up on a hill so she could see the ships come in. And that way she would know when it was time to go back to the home and make sure the girls were up and ready.
I understand. Here come the sailors.
Yeah. So, you know, it had kind of an interesting history. And then actually we bought it from kind of an adopted child of hers. So we never did really get the story. It seemed like there was something strange that went on in that family. And I figured the guy we bought it from was probably one of her workers' pregnancies that she just adopted to take, you know, care of her. But anyway, we were going along, and you know, the ghost never seemed to bother anybody. Things would disappear, but they always reappeared, and, you know, it never, you know, really affected.
By the way, that activity would be described more along the poltergeist line so far.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, nothing, I mean, once in a while you'd hear something kind of drop or whatever, or, you know, but nothing, I mean, there was no physical, and we had little kids. So,
yes.
You know, it didn't get too worried. Anyway, there was one day, and we were sitting around in the front room, and I was sitting in a chair by the door, and there were three or four of my friends, and we were having a few beers and just sitting back and talking. It was a nice day. And we had a cat that was given to us by a friend of my wife's who got married, and her husband was allergic to cats, so they had to get rid of it. So we adopted this cat.
Yeah.
And it was a very unusual cat, kind of quiet, not wild like yours, but,
uh-huh.
You know, it was an interesting cat, had a personality, you know. And so anyway, we were sitting there, and this cat come running up close to where I was sitting and sat down and looked up over my right shoulder like it was looking at something there. It wasn't looking at me. Anyway, the front door opened.
By itself?
By itself. The cat ran out, and the door shut.
Okay.
And I was sitting by the door. There was no breeze, no wind, nothing. And I just kind of looked at that, and I looked around, and everybody had just, like, quit talking. And they were all just, their mouths were kind of dropped, you know, hanging down. And I guess probably about 5-6 seconds went by before I finally said, "Did anybody see what I just saw?" And everybody goes, "Yeah," you know. And they go, "Well, it must have been the wind or something." I go, "I'm sitting right here." And anyway, the door was latched.
Well, obviously the cat saw whatever it was.
Yeah, anyway, I got the coldest chill over my body. It was like, you know, you get that tingling feeling.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, that was probably, well, I have another one.
No, that'll do. One per customer, and that's a beauty.
Can I tell you something about your UFO observation? It's real quick.
No, actually not tonight.
All right.
This is Ghost to Ghost. Thank you very much. That was a really good story. There's a lot of animal stories. As I said, the webcam photo I've got up there right now. It's hard to explain to you. We have a wild cat, a feral cat. And inside this cat is nothing but Mr. Sweetness, but that's several layers down. The wildness in this cat is now there and will always be there. And if you look at the photograph I took just before airtime tonight on the webcam, you look at those eyes, there is no mistaking the wildness. A cat that lets me hold it in its arms, but there is no mistaking the wildness. Take a good look at those eyes. On the international line, you are on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening. Where are you?
This is Jean. I've been up in Victoria, British Columbia.
Welcome to the program. Good to
have you. Thank you very much. There's a house in town, Art, here in Victoria that my parents bought back in about 1941.
Yes.
And that house has two ghosts in it. One is my brother, and the other is my mother.
Oh, my God. You know who they are.
I know who they are.
How do you know who they are? I mean, do you actually see?
I'm absolutely positive and without doubt, and I can tell you how.
Please.
In 1957, my brother Jim was killed in an accident. He was only 23, and he had been in the Army and a local police officer. Mm-hmm. And it was a very tragic thing, as you can well imagine.
Of course.
And as the years passed, you know, he was sadly missed. And more years passed, and my mother became very, very ill.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1983, we lost her to cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the house was sold.
Right.
Well, the new owners, after about 6 months or a year, contacted my sister and myself.
Oh, really?
Because there was somewhat odd things happening. And we went over there, and it was a young couple, and the father-in-law was helping with the renovations, because it was an old house. It needed a lot of work.
How did they even find you?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Probably through their realtor is the only thing I can think of.
I would imagine. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, my sister and I went over, and the gentleman's father was very upset, very, very agitated, and it was quite obvious that we weren't really welcome there. But the young couple, they took us down to the basement, and they had been seeing this image down there
mm-hmm.
of a very tall young man with dark hair. But he had something shiny on his left breast, like a police badge.
Oh, my.
So within the year, they sold the house. They got the hell out of there. They were very, very uncomfortable. So about 2 years passed. The next new owners of the house track us down.
Really?
Yep. Yep. And this was a very young, very pleasant brother and sister.
Okay.
Now, these two were ready with the teapot and the cookies. They were very, very interested in the history of the house. And, you know, had there been problems while we lived there? Well, no, we hadn't. So, again, we're down the basement, and they described the same image, a of a very tall young man, and my brother was 6'2" and a half, in dark clothing with the shiny on the left breast and the cap on. So we're going, uh-huh. But in their case, when they renovated the kitchen, it was like the old V-joint with the heavy molding on the floor.
Sure.
Well, they took the molding off, and behind the molding, they found an old photograph of my brother.
Oh, Lordy. In uniform.
Yeah.
Let me guess,
yeah, in uniform.
Uniform, yeah.
You're right. And the other thing that was happening is they were sitting in the front room watching TV one night, and the rocking chair started to move all by its lonesome.
The rocking chair.
The rocking chair. And in the rocking chair, they saw the vague image of a woman in her 60s with dark hair and a pretty house dress on. And you should know, my mother was a very kind and gentle lady, and her family was her whole life. And she was sitting in the rocking chair with a cup of tea.
Oh, boy.
Now, I asked the young lady, I said, well, are you nervous? And she says, no, you know, it's kind of like having my mom around. It's just kind of like having a guest, and it's very comfortable.
Well, I suppose every time that house is sold now, you're going to get a call.
Actually, this happened about the last time was about 15 years ago.
The disturbing thing about that to me, and it's the same thing that disturbed me in the first hour,
mm-hmm.
is we all want to know what happens when we pass.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow the prospect of being, of remaining in an area like that, in a house, as an almost non-existent being, is not exactly a pleasant prospect. If it's really the soul, the consciousness of the departed, I mean, I'm sure that's crossed your mind.
Well, I have two thoughts on that. Okay, number one, I think that for those on the other side, time is not linear as it is for us.
Yes.
And it could well be that they're in an eternal now.
Well, that's true. I hadn't thought about that. I really, really appreciate your call. Thank you. It's true. You've got to think about it a little bit. Certainly that caller could be correct. And it could be that something of the person's soul is left here on Earth, and something has moved on. That's a bit more of a comforting feeling when you think about it. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, this is Bill in Cincinnati.
Hi, Bill.
I live in what is, I guess you would call, a haunted house.
You do? Now?
Yes, I've lived here. I live here by myself. I don't have any problems with the ghost that's here. But it was related to me by the previous owner's son that he had an encounter continuously with this spirit of young boy. He claims that he slept in the attic there. They had fixed it up as a room for him.
Uh-huh.
And he would go to bed of a night. He had a little dog that slept at the foot of the bed. And he said this ghost of this young boy had the habit of climbing in bed with him. And I asked him, I said, didn't it scare you? He said, no, it didn't bother me. He said it felt cold, but he said the dog would leave the bed.
Well, the dog was smarter than he was.
Yes.
You know, if something cold crawled in my bed, I'd be out of there. I'd be out of there in 2 seconds. Dog's smarter than he is.
Yeah, he said as the years went by, it was as if this ghost matured with him and grew up, you know, from a young boy to a teenager as he did.
Oh, brother.
Yeah.
Somehow you don't think of spirits as aging.
Yeah.
In other words, they're usually fixed at some point, but maybe they do. I mean, what do we really know about the other side?
Yes. I had one little experience myself, since it's such a short one. This is one of them apparitions, you know, that, you know, have the red eyes. He didn't have red eyes, but...
I don't like red eyes.
It was a cold February morning. It was 3 a.m. in the morning, and it had just fresh fallen snow, no leaves on the tree. It was cold.
Yes.
And I just happened to look up. I was behind my mother's house, and I had some cats that I had to feed in a chicken house.
Yes.
And it was an old farm road that went back to the back of the farm. And I just happened to look up, and I saw this apparition flying through the air above the trees. It looked like a figure of a human being, but it was dark. It was intent. Its face antenna going the way, you know, it was flying and had these gigantic bat wings.
I didn't say anything
at it, and it didn't look down at me, and I let it go on over.
Good for you. Let it go on its way, the friendly skies or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, and you have a good day.
You take care. I've got a little story about a little boy here, too, that I want you to hear in a minute. This is Ghost to Ghost. Nothing but ghost stories all night long. I'm Art Bell. Stay right where you are.
To burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memory stored, and to use them to count.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nod.
Good morning and welcome to Ghost AM. Nothing but ghost stories all night long. In a long series, many, many years now of doing these programs, I can tell you this. If you will listen through the night, by the time the night is over, you will have no doubt that the soul, the spirit, the consciousness survives death. The question, I think, is in what manner? And the troubling stories for me, and I sympathize with that last caller very much, who was haunted, in effect, by his own family that remained in the house where they had lived. And I understand that the caller, in his mind, was able to rationalize that there may be not time on the other side, as there is here, and therefore they may be in two places at one time. But I think the worrisome thing that we have to acknowledge is the possibility that we should take the reports at face value. And so certainly the possibility that these entities are in fact all that is of these people left, the soul, the consciousness, is in fact here on Earth, is in fact trapped in a physical place, and a rather small one at that. You have to imagine that as one of the strong possibilities. Listen to this. My best friend was around 12 years old, growing up in Denver, and had a fight with his parents. He stormed off to his room screaming, "I hate you!" and slammed the door. His mom didn't appreciate it and wanted him to apologize, but he said it again and again with his mom locked out of the room again and again, "I hate you, I hate you." She kept trying to talk to him, but he kept screaming, "I hate you," until he began to get hoarse. At some point, some entity began to appear in his room near him. He saw a red outline of the being, but otherwise it was invisible. He felt a chill as it came near him. sat down, making an impression on the bed, an actual physical impression. At that point, he freaked out, screamed Jesus, and started apologizing profusely to his mother. Began screaming, "I'm sorry," hoarsely. The thing shot up straight through the ceiling. It's not that he thought that his mom sent the thing to curse him back, but he definitely realized the chanting of "I hate you" invited whatever it was in. All right, strap in. Here we go again. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Where are you calling from, please?
Hi, this is Joanne from Christopher.
Well, hi, Joanne.
Hi.
What have you?
I'm so thrilled.
Glad to have you. What story do you have, Joanne?
Okay, well, first let me tell you that I am usually a skeptic about everything. I've had spooky things happen to me in my lifetime, but I've always been able to chalk it up to a logical explanation.
Sure. It's good to be a skeptic.
Exactly. So this happened to me back in 1988 when I was still living in Chicago. I was a single mother, and I had two children.
Right.
And I was living in this apartment, and at the time I was so poor I didn't even have living room furniture. I had a TV and a VCR and a chair, and I was able to put a few pictures on the wall and this oval clock. Okay, it was just a cheap plastic oval clock.
Right, I've been there.
Well, one day I came home from work early because I wanted to watch this movie that I knew I wouldn't be able to watch in front of my children because, you know, they interrupt and you want to really pay attention. So I came home early and I started watching this movie. And I kept checking the clock on the wall to make sure, you know, to see what time they'd be coming home.
Sure.
So about toward the end of the movie, mm-hmm. I heard this big, like, crash, not like a big crash in my living room, but like something had hit the floor.
Right.
So I turn around because the TV was in the corner, okay? So I had my back to basically the whole living room.
Right.
All right? So I turn around and I look for, you know, what fell down, but I didn't see anything. So I thought, okay, maybe it's just me because, you know, when you have no furniture in a room, it's an echo.
Sure.
Okay, like a big sound.
That's right.
So I turn back to the TV and I keep watching the movie and then like maybe 3 minutes later I heard this like schnook against the wall.
Schnook?
Like something coming up against the wall.
Gotcha.
Okay. So I'm like, this is weird. So I look around again and I look to my left and there's my oval clock on the floor.
Oh.
Now, I had been checking this clock for the last say 2 hours of the movie. Now, what you have to understand is my living room at the time was like 14 feet long, hardwood floors.
Right.
That clock was on the opposite side of the wall. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I can only imagine that it's what was going on behind me, okay? Now, it would make logical sense that maybe it fell off the wall and it rolled across 14 feet to the other side of the wall.
Wouldn't make sense to me.
Because it's an oval clock.
Oh, I see.
You see what I'm saying? So I looked for every logical explanation.
Yeah, but you would have heard that six ways from Sunday.
I know, and it had a glass face.
Yeah, there's no way you would have missed that. I mean,
exactly.
Especially in a room like that with the echoing, no way.
Exactly. That's what freaked me out. So then I'm sitting there thinking, okay, there's my clock on the floor. The kids are not home yet, and I'm not even done watching my movie, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? And that's what made me think, what was going on behind my back that whole time that I was watching this movie? You get a picture of this thing, you know, like floating behind you.
Well, I'd say you're lucky it didn't land on you.
No kidding, but at least, you know, at least it would have been more real to me because I'd have loved to see it float. But of all the incidents that's ever happened to me, that's the only one I could never explain.
Well, if you'd actually seen it, you might never have been the same. That's
well,
what I would think about it.
I'd have been thrilled because I like things like this, you know.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I love listening to your show.
All right. Well, then you're going to love this. Thank you. Listen to this. It's an animal ghost story. We get some of these. This is from Diane in Wheeling, Illinois. Several times a year, I take my German Shepherd Heidi with me to visit my mother in northern Wisconsin. On one of those visits, my mother had just acquired a dog named Jigs. It was a lovable and extremely gentle dog. It was almost as large as Heidi, but had a very muscular build. He had very short white hair and sort of resembled a large boar. Jigs loved Heidi immediately. But she did not return his admiration. He tried to be friendly, and always behaved like a gentleman. He was happy to just be allowed to sit next to her or follow her. Through the years and many visits, Heidi gradually became more friendly toward Jiggs, and it was obvious that he was thrilled. One night, in late summer, not too long after a visit, I got into bed to go to sleep. Heidi was already in her place with her head on the pillow. I had just drifted into that twilight sleep when something awakened me. I sat up, I looked at the top of the wall, and I saw a huge white mist appear and saw it was in the shape of Jiggs. He was coming through the wall, then floated down toward Heidi and me. Upon settling on the bed between us, he evaporated. Oh, yes. The next morning, my mom called to tell me that Jiggs had died the night before at the exact time I saw him. He'd been attacked by a bear. He made it home just before he died. That's from Diane. Thanks, Diane. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Thank you, Mr. Bell, for taking my call.
Sure.
This is Dean in Grapevine, and we've talked before about clarity and things like that as far as the supernatural and your previous ghost stories.
Yes. Do you have one?
Actually, I do, sir. It happened in Anchorage, Alaska. A friend of mine was working on the Alaska Railroad, and we had talked him into letting me go on a little special trip that he only about once every 6 months. He got to do a little run down. It was probably about 70 miles southeast of Anchorage. And the reason why I wanted to go on this was because it was actually a little rail that goes inside a mountain. And they actually had a base inside this mountain, which really kind of intrigued me at the time. So I thought, well, you know, anybody that digs out the mountain, you know, it takes the time to dig out a mountain. It's got to be something worth looking at.
You bet.
So finally, after much, finagling, because it was kind of a military base, he finally let me go one weekend when everybody was kind of like in transition between different, I guess, because you had to literally live in this mountain when you got shipped in here. So it was kind of weird. It was like once you got into the, you know, through the about 20-minute railroad trip, it was, you're pretty much locked in.
Wow.
So once we got in there, sir, to make a long story short, I'm kind of like one of the very inquisitive types. And he had said basically, look, you know, here's a uniform. Don't talk to anybody. Just follow me. You know, we're going to, in fact, it was kind of interesting. There was only three buildings inside of it, including one way off to the side. And it was like a little lake inside that actually it was a very strange, surreal scene, but it was a 10,000-foot mountain.
Boy, that is weird.
It was, and it was something I'd never heard of. And when you looked at it from the inside, the most amazing thing was the winds never stopped. It was like a constant swirl. In fact, no matter where you went, it was literally like you were being rode along by the wind because it was like a vortex.
Inside a mountain?
Inside a mountain. And well, the train trip alone was amazing. Just going through, it was like a 20-minute trip to go actually inside of it. And then once you got out, you got off the train. There was a military hospital, what looked like kind of an airbase building, kind of like one of those old military buildings.
Sure.
And the explanation was that they had built some of these things during, you know, after the war and things like that. Well, one late night, cause, I mean, ironically, the only other building was a little bar in between there. You know, I guess alcohol finds its way in any place. So one late night after my friend had completed his shift and all of that, and everybody was kind of quiet, and I was kind of, you know, taking little notes and like that, but I wasn't allowed to bring cameras or nothing like that, because trust me, I would have, I could have. And he went to bed, and I'm just kind of, you know, listening to the wind howl, which never stopped howling. I finally went downstairs. Was kind of blown across the parking lot. I kind of got it to the point where I could actually take my jacket and kind of parasail across the parking lot. So I finally got across the parking lot, and we're talking about maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. It's pretty dark. It's about this time about 4 years ago, so it's about 45 degrees, and the wind's still going around. And I'm just kind of looking around, and at that point I catch a flickering light over in the corner, and I go over there, and it was by the little river, actually it was like a little lake. And I'd asked my friend if we could fish over there, and he goes, no, you don't really want to fish in that water. It's kind of a strange water. So as I'm walking around the side of the building, I see somebody there fishing in the water. Huh. I'm thinking, okay, this is strange. 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe he's bored. And I would be, too, if I was trapped inside a mountain. So I went over there, and it was like a guy in a train outfit, but it was more of a worker outfit. And it was a gentleman of Eskimo persuasion, and he was just fishing very quietly. He had a little lantern, a whole shot. And he seemed to be like humming or chanting or something like that, but it was very low-key. I walked up very quietly to him, and I think he noticed when he finally looked around at me, and didn't really acknowledge me, but went back to his fishing. So I kind of walked up a little nearer, and finally I was about 3 feet away from him. I went, sir, you know, I'm sorry to bother you, but are you catching anything in here? And he looks around at me, and he looks like past me, almost through me. He looks up, and I'm like going, okay, why is he looking behind me? And I turn around, and I'm like looking up, and I'm looking at the inside of the mountain, and it's kind of neat the way the lights kind of shimmer off the inside of the snow and all like that.
Right.
But as I'm looking up, I catch this little, like, almost like a little kind of a red light, but I'm not quite sure what I'm seeing. And all of a sudden, Art, it was the strangest noise you ever heard. It was like almost a compression sound. But what it was an actual vehicle. Somehow, it was not to say your black triangle kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was a black triangle vehicle. And sir, the most amazing thing was it goes from a ghost story to a UFO story, because when I turned around, he's gone. I'm like, wait a minute.
All of this inside a mountain.
Exactly. So as I'm looking up and I'm thinking, what am I looking at here? And the most amazing thing was it wasn't shifting anything on the side of the mountain as far as the snow.
Yeah.
It wasn't, there was nothing as far as a rumble. There was nothing. It was just almost a compression. And I almost felt like myself getting lifted up. And I look back and there's no rod, there's no reel, there's no nothing. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe he's just trying to, you know, show me something. So literally, as the vehicle kind of goes down, it just kind of like literally just twirls around and then shoots back up and it's gone. And I was thinking, you know, I wish it had landed, but seriously, I'm thinking to myself, I must thank this gentleman for, you know, shedding a little clarity in my life.
Oh, that's really weird. Thank you very much. That's one weird one. Inside of a mountain where the winds always howl. Huh. You don't want to catch fish in this water, huh? You see the kinds of things that have happened to people? Beyond reason, strange. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
How you doing today?
I'm okay, sir.
Okay. About 1989.
Where are you, by the way?
Oh, I'm in Wabash, Indiana, listening to you on WLS out of Chicago.
All right, the big one.
Okay. About 1989, my then-wife and I received a phone call saying that they had found her grandmother dead in her garage, and this was in East Tennessee. We lived in Middle Tennessee at the time.
Right.
And so we drove up there to attend her funeral. Now, her grandmother and her grandfather had divorced about 3 weeks before this. And these people were in their upper 70s and had been married for, goodness, over 50 years. And it was strange to us that they got a divorce. And when we got up there, we found out that they had found her in the garage, that she had turned her car on, and she had killed herself by the fumes.
Right.
And, you know, that's strange anyway. But what had happened was the doors were locked. The garage door was locked, and the door that led into the house was also locked. And this woman had a little over $75,000 in a savings. And my ex-wife, her the only child that they had was my ex-wife's father. And he had been in and out of trouble with the law, and he never did get a job. He lived with them up into his 40s. And recently had moved out because of a fight when they had broke up. The grandmother decided she wasn't going to keep her son no more, and she told him he had to get out and get a job. So me and my ex-wife was kind of thinking something was up, because he got all the money. And my ex-wife's grandfather had moved to Arizona, and so he didn't get any of it. And all of a sudden, this guy is spending all this money. He's going out and buying these crazy things, and this is within just a few days of the funeral. And he also had her body burnt, which she wanted to be buried in Michigan where she was born. And we were all upset over this, and we tried to stop it, but we couldn't because he had all the rights to do this. And I'll tell you what happened. We stayed for 2 weeks up there, and when we come back home, back to Middle Tennessee, all kinds of strange, weird things started happening in the home we were living in at the time. First, our children were telling us that something was coming in and out of our bedroom, and we, you know, they were small, and we didn't think anything of it. And then my wife told me, I worked the third, and she told me that all through the night she'd be sitting on the couch and she'd see these little shadows out of the corner of her eye.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, I've done that 1,000 times, and I always just pass that off as just a glance of something and you're not sure what it was, and, you know, you jump to conclusions on it.
So I
never listened to her.
Yes.
And but it got more and more and more and more. And finally, one day, I'm laying in bed. This is in the daytime. I worked third shift, so I had my windows all aluminum foiled so it was good and dark in there. And I had a fan going so I wouldn't hear the outside noise.
Yep.
I've been in bed probably about, I guess, maybe 10 minutes, and I wasn't asleep yet. And my bed started trembling, like what it would tremble as if a large truck had drove by.
Yes.
I sat up in my bed. I'm thinking, this is weird. And it keeps on trembling. So I get up out of my bed. I go to the door. As soon as I open the door and light comes in the room, the bed stops. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, this something caused it. It's just, it's nothing. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I go back to bed, turn the light out. I'm laying there 15, maybe 16 minutes, just about getting to the point of being tired. It's pitch dark in here. All of a sudden, I get really cold. And I feel somebody, literally, and this is, I mean, literally feel somebody move the hair away from my ear.
Oh, man.
Set, and I'm being honest, and set on the bed.
Yes.
You know, when somebody sits on the bed, you can feel it.
Oh, yes.
And they whisper, John. And I'm like, you know, I said, Angie? And that's my, that was my wife's name. And she didn't say nothing. I raised up fast, you know, and I was freaking out. And it was so cold in there, and I could hear scattering noises, like, you know, like if somebody was running about in my room.
Yes, yes.
I scream. And it wasn't like a girl scream. I yelled, Angie! And I guess a minute or two after I had yelled that two or three times, she come rushing in and opened the door, and she's like, what's the matter with you? And I said, somebody just whispered John in my ear, and that was her dad's name. Okay. That was the biggest thing that happened to me. And then after that night, I also started seeing the little shadows on my days off when I'd be up late at night from working third and I couldn't sleep at night. I'd constantly see him. Weird things were happening. The microwave oven in the kitchen would come on and start running for no reason. And, you know, my father would say, oh, well, it's just microwave. Who knows? Electrical problems could cause that or whatever. Nobody wanted to listen to us. And it would get cold, and I started seeing the shadows. The kids kept complaining of it. Angie had said that the bed would tremble on her. I felt it several times. This all went on for almost a year without stopping, to the point where we had a friend over who was staying with us at the time. She went back to where she was living because she said she couldn't sleep there, because she said she'd have too many bad dreams and weird things happen to her at night that she couldn't explain, like, you know, like somebody was watching her.
We're coming up on a break here.
Okay, I'm going to finish it then. Well, what happened was we ended up finding out that there was a possibility that John might have done something. The police had been investigating him, and we didn't know it. They didn't tell us. It was secret. And what happened was he got killed in an accident. He drove into the fog, and he ended up running into a truck head-on and died. The day that we got a call saying that he had died that morning, everything stopped.
And I've got you.
And I believe that she was telling me that John killed her.
I've got you. Thanks for the call, sir.
Hey, you're welcome.
Bye. Oof.
Like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well, in a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet. You know that ghost is me, and I will never be set free as long as
want to take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. Actually, it's Ghost to Ghost AM with Art Bell this night. And all we're doing is telling ghost stories, and the only rule is no goodbyes. I'm not good at them anyway and don't like them. So it's Ghost to Ghost all night long. We'll get right back to it. The following comes from Keith in California. Art, when my wife and I were first married, about 30 years ago, I was a stockbroker and she was, well, a housewife. We purchased a new home in a housing tract that was built upon an old horse ranch in the northwest side of the San Fernando Valley in Southern California. Well, I always thought there was something not quite right about the house in the area, but didn't give it a lot of thought. You know, and always here or there for no reason. Well, one night around 10 o'clock, My wife and I went to bed. She was wearing a purple flannel outfit, nothing unusual. Just another night in the valley. We'd been there for about 20 minutes. I'd not yet quite fallen asleep, just, you know, sort of in and out of the twilight zone, thinking about that day's events. I looked over at the bathroom, 10 feet away. The door was open, and the nightlight was on. There, at the bathroom door, my wife was standing. I was a bit surprised and asked her, "What are you doing up?" She said, "Huh?" And it was evident by her response that she was in the bed next to me. As soon as she said, "Huh?" the image standing at the door vanished. Thanks, Keith. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
This is Everett from Oregon. Listen to you on 1190KX.
Yes, the powerhouse in Portland.
Yeah. I got to set the story up. I'm a little nervous. It's the first time I've ever talked to anybody on the radio.
All right. Well, just take a good deep breath and tell us like it is.
Okay.
Or was.
Okay. Me and my sisters and my parents all lived in this house in Milwaukee, Oregon. And my oldest sister, Karen, lived up, well, she slept up in the attic. And she kept on hearing, like, at nighttime, she'd hear scratching and, like, growling noises.
Growling?
Growling noises.
Scratching, maybe mice, maybe rats. Growling, not good.
Yeah, so my she kept on complaining about it to my parents, so they moved her downstairs with us. Mm-hmm. And then one night, I woke up, and I was scared to go to the bathroom by myself because I was only, like, 5 or 6 years old. And so I woke up my middle sister. She's, like, you know, in age group, middle, okay. Asked her if she'd help me go to the bathroom. You know, walk me to the bathroom. So we walked down the hall. And
you had to get your sister was how old?
She was, I don't even know. I was 5 or 6, so she must have been, 8 or 9.
And you had to get your sister to help you to the bathroom?
Well, yeah, because I was scared. I was always scared of the dark when I was younger.
All right.
Okay, so we're walking down the hall to the bathroom, and we look out into the living room because there's a doorway, and the couch goes sliding across the living room.
What?
The couch goes sliding across the living room.
While you're watching it?
Yes, and this huge hand, like, looks like King Kong's hand, comes out from behind it.
Oh, man.
And it starts, like, moving towards us. So we run back to the room, you know? And I jump in my bed, and I throw the covers over my head, and I sit there for I don't know even how long. And
are you sure now that this was not your bladder preparing to explode?
It's possible. I don't know.
I mean,
my sister saw it, too, so I don't know.
Doesn't sound like it. All right, so you ran back to the bedroom.
Yeah.
That's what I would have done, yes.
And I pull up, after I don't even know how long, I pull the covers up, and I see this thing, and there's no way with the size that it was it could have passed through the doorway, but it was hovering over us, you know? And then it just seemed to go away, and I must have waited for like 2 or 3 hours. And then I was like, I have got to go to the bathroom, you know? And so I got my sister to help me go back, you know, to walk me again, and we got to the bathroom this time.
Yes.
And
I don't mean to laugh, I'm sorry.
That's okay, I know. But okay, so then when we were walking back, the door handle to the going up to the attic was rattling. And the door was
God.
There's a whole bunch of stuff with this house, but that was the big one.
Oh, that's a big one, all right. So it was basically it was a hand after you.
Yeah, it was gigantic, like it looked like King Kong's hand. It filled up the whole living room. And the next morning, the couch was moved out a little bit, but it wasn't like thrown across the living room like it was.
Yeah. Oh, sir. I'm laughing because that one scares me.
I'm serious. That's what I saw. I was only 5 or 6, so I don't know, but
5 or 6 is old enough never to forget that.
Yeah, I always remember that.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Take care. Oh, I don't know if I like that one at all. A giant hand moving this couch, sliding it fast across the floor, and then chasing you into the bedroom. And your already swollen bladder, you fling yourself into bed, as you know you would, right? I would. And there is the hand above the bed. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. It's Elizabeth in Oshawa.
Oshawa.
Yes, Ontario.
Ontario.
Just east of Toronto.
Very welcome.
Listen, you know that computer of yours, when it went belly up, it actually hissed.
Huh.
I could hear it.
Well, you know what? That actually, I tell you, my computer has screwed up before, and half the time it's been cockpit error. It's been me. This time, no way. In the mode that it was in, it could have only done one thing. I had one command into it, and that was to do a stinger, that revolting little sound that we're forced to play.
Yeah.
And it could not have done what it did, but it did it. These kinds of things happen during these shows, and I'm getting used to it. Anyway.
That's what makes it fun.
Anyway, you go right ahead.
Well, and listen, just quickly, while you were telling that dog story,
yes,
as the ghost was disappearing, you know, dissipating,
yes,
I have a dingo, and he came in from the other room, smiled up at me, put his tongue on the phone, right on
put
the
mouthpiece.
Put his tongue
on the mouthpiece of the phone?
Yeah, while you were talking about that dog, and he was smiley, you know, he has a smile, and then he just settled right down, and he's sleeping.
And a dingo, that's from Australia, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a cattle dog. He's partly German Shepherd, and he's just gorgeous. His radar ears.
Well, maybe he just appreciated that story.
Well, I don't know. He's kind of psychic. He comes when I think about him.
So he gave us a little tongue, that's all.
Yeah, he was just kissing the phone.
I hear you.
Well, listen, I got a funny story for you. You were talking about people, artists being night people and so on. Well, I'm one of those, and I'm also an actual clairvoyant medium. And for many years, I couldn't just figure out what to do with all this. So I took myself to a little spiritualist church in Toronto that was had been there for many years. And I was pretty skeptical about the whole deal, but I needed to find out what this was going on with me.
Yeah.
So during the service, the guest medium, it was a very nice elderly lady. She didn't know me from Adam, but she came over to me and put her hand on my shoulder, and she said, "My dear, I have a message from an aunt, a vibration aunt." And she said, "Her name is Bert," and she kind of thought that was odd for a lady. And then she said, "Oh, it's Bertha. Did you have an aunt you called Bert?" And I said, "That's right." Well, she said, "She says to tell you, my dear, that the tears you've shed for so long will soon be over." And that was the end of the message. And I kind of had an idea what she was talking about, but I wasn't sure. And so on my way home, I was in the subway and waiting on the platform, and I was just wandering around. Suddenly, something made me turn around. And hanging in the air was, it was like light, more than life size, and it was my aunt's ex-husband who was deceased.
In the middle of the air.
Yeah, like clairvoyant. It was just like a big TV screen, you know, superimposed.
Yes.
And I see things like that quite often, but it always startles me. And there he is, hanging in the air, just from his arms up, and he had them folded, and he was smoking this big cigar, and which was usual for him. But I couldn't figure out, well, what the heck am I seeing Uncle Jack for, you know, And so I puzzled all the way home, and that thought just stayed with me. I could actually still see it in my mind.
Sure.
Anyway, a few weeks later, I was at work. The phone rang, and it was my mother to tell me that my aunt that lived with her sister, had been a nurse for many, many years, and she had fallen, and we thought she had broken her hip, but she wouldn't let her call an ambulance. So I had to rush up to the house and get the ambulance and go through all that and get in the hospital. Well, she survived that, but she died of pneumonia. So a few weeks after that was all over, I was in my apartment, and I was standing at the kitchen sink, and all of a sudden, you know how you get that little feeling on the back of your neck that you should turn around, there's somebody looking at you?
Of course, it's an unmistakable feeling.
It's just like somebody taps you on the neck mentally.
And?
And I turned around, and the same thing, my uncle and my aunt were together. And they were just hanging in the air, smiling. The funny part is my aunt had on her old nursing cap and her blue nursing cape that she hadn't worn that for years.
Well,
but
there
it was
you
the
are.
Kind they wore when they were young nurses, you know, in the 40s. 30s.
So they were there to show you they were together and happy?
They were together, and they had come to say goodbye. But the funny part is they hadn't been friends for years. They'd been divorced for years.
Well, who knows what it's going to be like in the afterlife. Thank you very much for that call. A lot of times, you know, you've got to wonder, particularly if you've been married a few times. You know, we talk about soulmates, and we talk about who's going to be over there on the other side and all of that. Well, if you've been married several times, what if it's your ex waiting for you? What if your ex is? Give that a little thought. I mean, everybody always, the current relationship, right, is the one that you certainly imagine would be waiting for you on the other side, should you die at this time. But it may not be that way. It may be your hellish shrew of an ex is over there waiting for you. But then that couldn't be heaven, could it? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art. How are you?
I'm all right. Where are you?
My name is Michael Coleman. I'm president of the Ghost Hunter Society based here in Schaumburg, Illinois.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
What, you guys actually hunt ghosts?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Then you would have a good way. Then if you were to select the best of your stories, what would it be?
Well, actually, I'll tell you a story. Just before I formed the Ghost Hunter Society, it was one of my first hands-on ghost hunting experiences. Now, my family's been riddled with ghost stories, and I've experienced some weird things in my time, but this particular story took place in the northwest suburbs at a, at the time it was a restaurant. Unfortunately, I can't divulge where that is.
That's fine.
But I happen to know the night manager there, and he invited us over. We didn't know why. He knew my interest in the paranormal. So he invited myself and a friend, and we stayed after closing hours, and he proceeded to tell me that strange things were going on in this restaurant. For instance, some of the wait staff were feeling pushes and pinches, turning around, and no one was there.
Pinches.
Temperature would fluctuate. Computers, oddly enough, just like yours, would go a little haywire. The chandelier in the grand ballroom would start swinging back and forth on its own. And one of the oddest things that occurred at this establishment was an elevator. Now, it just seems like a normal elevator, but this elevator would travel between floors, up and down, only at night. I had a hard time believing it. So, I had him take us on a small tour of the basement area, you know, places that normal customers didn't have access to. And we walked around, and he showed us the elevator shaft. Now, mind you, there were only four of us in this restaurant, himself, his assistant manager, myself, and my friend Scott.
Right.
We are all downstairs in the basement. He shows us the small wine cellar, which is right next to the elevator shaft service area.
Yes.
He opens up the service area shaft, and we all step inside, and he goes, "Look how small this is." As soon as he says that, the elevator starts coming down on top of us. Now, no one
knows. Oh, man, that's like it's been my horror. That's one of those things, along with falling in a crack in the earth, that I've always had this, to imagine an elevator coming down on top of you is like the biggest horror, next to falling in a crack in the ground, I could even think of, to get crushed, to get mushed by an elevator coming down when you could. Listen, now, you want to hold it right there, and we'll let you finish up the story after.
Sure.
Stay right where you are. I already don't like this one. I hate this story, but here we go back to it. Elevator coming down.
Well, the elevator coming down wasn't as fast as you'd think.
well, that would make it worse. I mean, even slow. Even
slow impending doom.
Oh, yeah, slow impending doom is right, yes.
So, needless to say, we experienced the same feelings that you described and headed out of that elevator shaft. Regrouped back up in the central area. Where he proceeded to tell us, the night manager proceeded to tell us that more experiences had occurred up in the upstairs level from the waitstaff of the pinching and the pushing. So I decided to go up there on my own, and everyone else stayed down below.
Huh.
Ready to follow me up there.
I thought only girls in low-cut gowns did that kind of stuff.
Right.
All right.
At this point, I think that they didn't want to experience anything else that evening, but
right.
I had just gotten warmed up, so I wanted to go upstairs and check out the upstairs level. Well, as I was going up the stairs, the night manager had also told me that an apparition was seen on that same stairway that I was ascending.
Great.
So as I ascended up this dark stairway up into the upper level, of course, all the lights were off, and I proceeded to walk around, and about 5 minutes, I felt a cold spot in the middle of the dining room.
Yes.
At that point, I had heard footsteps coming up the stairway, only to find that it was my friend Scott, who has now become my administrative officer for the organization, and he joined me in trying to find this cold spot. Now, keep in mind, this was a July evening. Temperature outside was relatively about maybe 82, 83 degrees.
Right.
And we're inside the building. And we felt this cold spot, about 20 degrees lower than the ambient temperature.
Oh, that's really cold.
Yeah, it was pretty frigid. So I immediately, unfortunately, I didn't know that this was going to be a ghost hunt. Otherwise, I would have brought my equipment along. The other thing I had with me was my friend's lighter. So I proceeded to go around the air conditioning fence to see if the air conditioning was on, see if the flame flickered at all, and it didn't. We quickly found the cold spot again, and it started to move. It moved along the entire length of the dining room.
You could actually follow it?
Yeah, it was actually...
And you could go in and out of it?
Exactly. It wasn't like a force pushing type of a feeling, but you would feel it, and then it would almost pass through you, and then you'd pick it up again.
I understand.
So we followed it back, and I was on one side of it, my friend Scott was on the other, and I had stopped against it. It pushed me, well, not pushed, but had backed us up to a wall. My back was facing the wall, my friend Scott was facing me.
Yes.
Then I see my friend Scott's eyes just light up and look behind me. And I'm thinking, well, what could possibly be behind me? There's a wall behind me. Turns out I had backed up against the elevator doors. And the elevator doors were now opening. And
oh, my God, you were about to walk backwards into the... Oh, my.
Well, the elevator was there.
It was there. But
previously, it was on the lower floor because it had descended down upon us.
Yeah.
So now this elevator we had proof that it had actually moved between floors at night by itself.
Yes.
And I rode the elevator down while my friend Scott did not. He went down the stairway.
You got on the damn thing?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's no wonder you're in the business now, because none of us would do any of that junk.
Anyways, I followed it down and entered into the main floor area where everyone was away in the back room where no one was able to push the call. But my friend Scott had then met me downstairs. And we decided to call it an evening, and I would come back and do a full investigation later on. Well, as we were leaving, we noticed that the window on that second floor near that elevator had been frosted over.
Frosted over.
Frosted over.
So that's
all
where the
windows were fine. Now,
that's where the cold spot went.
July evening.
Yeah.
And now, consequently, in an epilogue, I tried following up to see if I can get back in there. The night manager that I knew had consequently quit. Claiming that lights
don't
turning on
them.
And off by themselves.
Don't blame them a bit, yep.
And I tried to see if I can get in there with the owners, and the owners had moved out of there.
Uh-huh.
And another business had moved in,
uh-huh.
And 2 months later they moved out.
Uh-huh.
And currently that property is on the market. I contacted the local realtor that was selling that property.
You want to buy it?
It was actually haunted.
You want to buy it?
If I had the money, believe me, I would. There's not a whole lot of money in ghost hunting.
I wonder if they're going to be required to notify the people who do buy it what's going on.
That I don't know.
There's laws about that.
I know that you should tell somebody, if there was a death that had occurred in a property, you should tell them that it had occurred, although I don't know the statute of limitations.
There are laws about ghosts as well in many states.
Oh, yeah.
All right, sir, I appreciate the call, and lots of luck to you ghost hunting. But I guess you've got the personality for it based on what I just heard. I never would have done any of that. Whale of the Dead. Has anybody ever heard of Whale of the Dead? Dear Art, it was a sunny afternoon in northern Marin County, California, the day that my grandmother died. My father took his afternoon walk on the Frank Lloyd Wright Civic Center Library to return the books he checked out the previous week. On his way home, he felt a slight breeze against his neck, and he heard a deep moan come from what it seemed out of nowhere. He just happened to glance down at his digital wristwatch at the exact moment of the moan, noticed the time was 2:40 p.m. He felt very uneasy because there wasn't anywhere near where he was walking, not even an animal. The path he walked home on was completely deserted. Within minutes, he arrived back home. As he entered the house just after 3 o'clock, my mother told him the sad news that she had received a phone call from the convalescent hospital where my grandmother had been living. She stated that a nurse phoned at exactly 2:50 p.m., saying my grandmother had just passed away 10 minutes previously. Weeks later, an Irish friend of my dad said that he heard of this type of thing. It's happened before. And the Irish had known this phenomena as the Whale of the Dead. By the way, Chris in Mesa says my grandmother was 100% Irish. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Yes, Art. My name is Sandia, and I'm calling from Larkspur near San Francisco, California.
Welcome.
Thanks. In 1988, I experienced something that I've come to call in my mind the affair of the haunted convent. And I had been studying healing, various healing methods, with a group of friends, and our teacher decided that a smaller group of us were ready for a teacher training workshop in these methods of healing that she had developed.
Right.
One of the people in this smaller group was a nun, and she arranged for us to do this workshop in a retreat convent that belonged to her order of nuns. And we met there on the first day, and all of us, except for the woman, the nun, felt a very creepy feeling in the house. The air was thick. It almost felt like we were moving underwater rather than moving through normal air.
I know the feeling.
It was very, very strange. And so we had our workshop that first day feeling rather uneasy. And then that night, the teacher of the workshop, who lived nearby, went home, and the nun went back to her convent in San Francisco because she had a meeting there early the next morning.
Right.
None of us slept very well. I had dreams all night that faces were coming towards me begging for help, and had an almost sleepless night and then bad dreams when I did fall asleep. The next morning, we all got up and met for breakfast, and the teacher came back to the house, and the nun was going to be there later in the day. And the teacher walked into the house and said, "None of you slept very well, did you?" And we all agreed, and she had tuned into us during the night, and she had had very disturbing dreams as well. We compared notes. We had all had basically the same dreams of these faces coming towards us and begging to be set free.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. And we decided that we felt that whatever the spirits were in this place, that we couldn't really banish them. But we felt that they belonged to the land there. But we decided to do a kind of ceremony to ask permission whether we could stay and continue the workshop.
That really bothers me. And I'm hearing it again and again and again tonight, that the spirits, or whatever they are, appear to be attached to geographic locations, very narrow ones at that.
Mm-hmm.
But in your case, many faces begging for help.
Well, what I saw, it was faces of all the nuns who had stayed on that property over the years.
Well, you wouldn't think nuns would be trapped.
Well, I felt that you wouldn't think that. That's what was kind of surprising about it. But I felt that maybe that anybody who had stayed on that property, and there had been a number of different buildings there over the past 150 years.
I know, but nuns are supposed to go to heaven without passing go.
Well, that was what was surprising to us. And the other thing that we thought was odd was that the nun who had invited us there, who was quite gifted psychically, actually, didn't feel any of this, though she appeared uneasy to us, but she wasn't able to name it the way that we were. So we did this ceremony, and immediately to us, the atmosphere appeared to change. It was kind of like on hold, like we had permission to stay there. And shortly after we finished the ceremony, the nun who had invited us there came back from San Francisco.
Yes.
And the minute she stepped in the door, she looked around and said, "Oh, my God, it feels so different here now." And so we proceeded with the workshop over the next several days. And though we felt much more comfortable there, strange things continued to happen, especially somehow with me, like I was some kind of conduit for energy or something, because every time I would go to turn on a lamp or a light switch for an overhead light, the bulb would pop. The glass wouldn't break, but the filament would pop, and the bulb would be useless.
Yep.
And eventually I went through every single extra light bulb in the house, almost 50 light bulbs, and finally we decided that I was no longer allowed to operate any of the light switches, and other people had to do it for me. And for some time after that, even in other houses that I would stay, I would have similar experience with light switches, or like an earlier caller tonight, various appliances would turn themselves on and off, especially televisions and clothes dryers in the middle of the night. And then after a few weeks, it sort of dissipated.
Boy, I've got a lot of electronics around here. I wouldn't let you anywhere near my house.
Well, I haven't really had experiences since then, and I didn't feel any disturbing feeling with those continued experiences.
Yeah, I know, but anybody who can kill 50 light bulbs...
Well, it was very odd, but the rest of the workshop proceeded very well. And then later, I asked independently two different psychics and a rather gifted medium that I know, and they all got similar impressions, almost kind of stereotypical that you might hear. They all felt that retreat center had been built on either an Indian burial or ceremonial ground. And I later did some research and found that in that particular part of San Francisco Bay, because this house was right on part of the bay,
yes,
that in that area there were indeed a number of different ceremonial and burial grounds, though I couldn't find information about that particular piece of land.
Still, anything that would keep nuns' spirits locked in a physical location, that's something to think about.
Well, it felt like very, very powerful energy to all of us.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
And take care. That's not good. I mean, nuns, as I said, they're supposed to proceed without passing go. And if they don't, then, you know, what's in store for us, right? Who have lived the lesser life. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Art. I want to say I love the show.
Thank you. I can barely hear you.
How's it?
A little better.
Okay.
Where are you?
I'm in Pearl, Mississippi. My name's Steven.
Okay, Steven.
About the end of last summer, some friends of mine and I were spending the night at our church. I guess being in the Bible Belt, you know, church is a central part of our social life, you know.
Sure.
And it was about the middle of the night. And the youngest of us, who was probably about 10 at the time, decided he wanted to get a Coke. And all the lights in the church except for the classroom that we were in were turned off. And so I, being the oldest, was volunteered into going to get the Coke.
Of course.
And so I go to open the door, and I get the creepy feeling, you know, like the last caller was talking about, that you know, something's not right. And so I grab the nearest thing that I can find, and it's a wooden cross, and I walked to another classroom to get the Coke, and I stopped dead in my tracks because I hit a cold spot. And I've been having experiences like this since I was about 9 years old. So I
cold spot in a church.
Pardon?
In a church.
In a church.
Okay.
Of all places. And so I called two of the others to come, you know, check this out, see if they felt what I felt, and they felt it. And so I grabbed a golf club because one of my friends had brought his golf club. I haven't the slightest idea why, but I grabbed one of those. Not that I could do anything with it if a ghost came at me, you know.
Has it later occurred to you that a golf club versus a spirit?
My point exactly. I have the slightest idea why I did it.
It's like bringing a knife to a gunfight, but
really?
All right, go ahead.
And so we proceeded to go down the hallway, and the youngest one, he stopped, and then the next one stopped, and I looked at them, and I couldn't figure out what it was, and they had just turned pale as sheets, and I turned to see what they were looking at, and there was a woman in the hallway. And there were a half dozen of us, and we were all, you know.
Was she fully manifested, in other words, fully in the physical, or... No,
she was definitely there. We could see her. We couldn't see through her. And she was, you know, shining.
Shining.
And, yes. And so we had, you know.
You didn't yell for and take a swing, did you?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. No, we all turned heel and ran for our freaking lives, you know.
That's more like it.
one of the only smart colors here, I guess.
Well... You know, I understand the guy was in the business. He would go investigate, obviously. He
That's
was
very, true.
Very curious. But for everybody else, I'd turn tail,
right.
I'm with you, and I'd run, and that's what you did.
Right, and so I get back into the classroom, and we're trying to tell the other guys, and they're all skeptical about it. And they're like, yeah, right. And my younger brother, who happens to be asleep across the room from me right now, I'm trying to keep quiet, he looks out the door and just points. His eyes wide as saucers, and we all look, and there's a huge, I mean, unhumanly huge arm.
Arm.
An arm.
Oh, God, this is like the hand.
Like, it's not floating in midair, but like reaching around the door.
Oh.
So we all back up against the opposite wall.
At least.
And I turn away, and there's a window, and you can't really see through it because it's not... flat glass, you know, it's kind of a weird kind of glass that you can't see through.
Right.
And there was a pattern of light moving around on it, and at this point, we were all completely freaked out, and so we ran for the nearest, you know, way to get out of the building, which was a clear door, and we saw a face with the dreaded glowing eyes.
Oh, the glowing eyes.
I'm sure that, yeah, and... At that point, I realized they might not be able to kill you physically, but they sure as anything give you a heart attack, because I just about dropped dead.
Oh, I do understand. I think that you know, it's entirely possible to scare a human being to death.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, without question, to stop somebody's heart, and that situation sounds like a heart stopper to me.
Right. And so
what, how'd you get out of there?
Well, we all got in, we all... sat down, not sat down, but huddled together in one of the classrooms, and some of us started praying, some of us started just, you know, doing whatever we could to get our minds off of it, and nothing else happened that night, but it's been a recurrent thing ever since.
Well, this is beginning to bother me. I mean, you just told me a story about a church, a pretty terrible story, and the caller before was telling me about nuns being trapped in this place, begging to be released. What do these things tell us about the afterlife? Maybe nothing we want to hear.
That's very true.
Oh, brother.
I don't think that these were dead people, though. I think it was, you know, angelic and demonic beings, whether going against each other or, you know, the angelic beings trying to protect us. I haven't foggiest idea.
Maybe some kind of war going on in there.
Very possibly. That's the prevailing theory among the few of us. I'm the only person who's even ever actually told anybody about it.
I presume it is something that you will never forget for the rest of your life.
I don't think so.
I don't either. And by the way, your portable phone's battery is about to give out.
It is.
It's a good thing you got your whole story in. All right, my friend. Thank you very much for the call.
You too.
You take care. That was a little much. A giant arm following you about. glowing eyes, a face, and all of that in a church. And that followed the story about the nuns, spirits, trapped, all of them. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM, or more likely, Ghost to Ghost AM. Ghost stories all night long, that's what we're doing. So if you have a really good one up in the class you've been hearing tonight, we're all ears.
Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
That'd be us. The night shift. Good morning. Great to be with you. We'll do more of this haunting stuff in a moment. This is Ghost to Ghost AM. By the way, on Friday, this coming Friday, this by-then radio ghost is going to be out haunting the circuit court for Davidson County in Nashville, Tennessee, beginning about 9 o'clock in the morning, looking for justice. And the haunting will continue until we get it. Just a thought. Here's something from Alaska. It was the middle of the winter, 1971 in Alaska, Palmer, Alaska. The snow was already on the ground for a long time. I know about that. And with the temperature, had turned crunchy. You all know what that's like, right? With the cold, the occasional wind polishing the top layers of snow. On this night, the moon was full. Visibility was good due to clear skies. One of my household chores was to take out the trash. My little note, I still do that, by the way. Tonight was the night to do it. Our family lived in an apartment complex nestled in the woods. Then the city wasn't as big as today, so it was still rustic. You, Art, lived in Alaska, probably know what I mean. Yes, I do. The garage facilities, or shed, if you will, which it really should have been called, was on the opposite end of our complex, and so I set out to haul the trash. Once I got to the other side of the building, it was quiet, visibility pretty good, moonlighted the night pretty well. After having dumped the trash, I was standing there, just taking in the evening stars, pretty to look at on a winter's evening in Alaska. Then I heard crunch, crunch, crunch. The sound, obviously, of somebody or something walking in the snow. As I trained my senses and eyes to the source, it seemed the sound was moving toward me. Crunch, crunch, crunch. It was indeed moving closer and closer. Was it a dog, a person, a moose? My eyes were straining, trying to see it. Closer, yet the sounds came. Before I knew it, the sound was on top of me. My eyes looked out toward the source of the sound. Crunch, crunch, crunch. And I knew something was near. I looked at the ground and saw something walking towards me. Art, there was nothing, nothing in front of me. I looked down again, expecting to see at least footprints, And I did. But they weren't footprints. The prints were hoof prints. And whatever was making them was almost in front of me, literally in front of me, but nothing was physically there. Whatever was walking toward me was on two legs. It stopped right in front of me, my mind racing as my heart pumped and the adrenaline pumped. I stood there in shock. My jaw must have been hanging open. And I was wide-eyed. I reached out my arm and waved it in front of me and was waving at thin air. I did what any kid would do. I turned around and ran like hell. Ran as fast as I could back home. I don't know what it was, but that's what happened to me. There's an Alaskan story for you. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Art. This is Sean in Groseal, Michigan.
Hi, Sean.
My story goes back to 1965 or 6 when I was a five-year-old kid in Chicago down on the south side in Hyde Park.
Yes.
We moved into a house that was an old wood frame house, and they're very rare in Chicago because of in the Chicago fire, almost all of them burned down back in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
So as we moved into this house, as a kid and with my parents, we'd explore, and up in the attic there was some charring where there had been a fire in the attic, and there was an old maybe maid's quarters up there in this area, which was interesting. But as my parents explored around the attic, they found boxes of old glass negatives. Are you familiar with those?
I am, yes, I remember them.
And the funny thing that I didn't find out till later was they only showed we kids some of these negatives because some of them were actually very pornographic. But we only knew that there were these old pictures of old days back in Chicago up there. Well, as time went by, the attic was accessible through one of those drop-down stairways.
Oh,
and
yes, yes,
continuously
yes.
We'd hear little sounds and the lights would be on up there. Well, we went through a project for about a half a year restoring the banister going upstairs. It was an old mahogany banister, so the whole family would be there. That was our entertainment for a long time. And we kept hearing sounds and thumps and footsteps and a sound almost like a bag of potatoes rolling out upstairs. And my dad finally one night grabbed a meat cleaver because he was sure this time it was so loud that there was somebody up there. So he grabbed a meat cleaver from the kitchen. And our most loyal, brave dog in the world was with us, Gretchen, and she would not go with him. The hackles went straight up on her back, and she would not go. So he actually grabbed her by the collar because he thought he was going to have a confrontation. He went upstairs, pulled down the stairs to the attic. The light was on again, and he went upstairs, had to drag the dog with him, whimpering and crying and everything else, only to find nothing again. And what was really strange was we continued to hear these sounds, and it was just part of our lives for about 4 more months until we were ready to move from the house. And my dad packed these pictures up and got rid of them, shipped them out, and it all went away.
It was in the pictures.
Oh, it was in the pictures. Yeah, we're almost positive that what happened was this fire that had happened up there probably took this maid's life, and they were her pictures, and no one knew about it, but she was,
oh,
I'm sure, worried about being found out through time.
I understand.
When they finally went away, that was the end of it. She was able to go off into peace.
Whew. Well, the implication of that is that if there is something that strong in life that we're afraid of being found out, we can't be released in death. And, you know, I've heard this again and again and again and again, and I would like to think, like an earlier caller, that the other side has no time and you're in two places at once, but it sure, you've got to imagine the other possibility, and that is that you really are trapped like that nurse.
Absolutely. As a five-year-old, it was so real, and you're not really tuned into supernatural or fear in the same way, and it was just such a real part of growing up. It was amazing.
A real part of growing up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And take care. Imagine if you knew there were pornographic pictures of you. And you had them, I don't know, stored somewhere the way this lady apparently did. But you died. And you knew you were going to be found out. You knew that eventually they would be found. Would such a thing keep you on Earth? Wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
How you doing, Art?
Okay.
About the whole mid to early 90s, excuse me, I was logging up here in Northern California.
Oh, you mean back in the days when you could actually log in California?
Yeah, we used to be able to do that.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it was a burn lightning strike, you know, hit it and burned up quite a few thousand acres. But anyway, in amongst this burn was an Indian burial ground or maybe a medicine area. Okay, we finally moved into that area. And I was waiting for the trucks to gather up. We had all our machinery there. And, well, it was a circle of oak trees. Anyway, one truck come dragging in. He says, oh, this is the place. I'm going to get my shovel out and go scratch around and look for artifacts. And I'm half Native American. I said, this is not a thing to do. Well, anyway, it took me quite a while to consider, you know, to...
Meaning you were saying...
Don't
be logging here?
Don't be scratching around with your shovel looking for artifacts.
Much less logging.
Right. So anyway, we finally got set up. First of all, we're talking brand new equipment. The skidder didn't start. Batteries are dead.
Hmm.
Second of all, we finally got the skidder started, then my machine wouldn't start. Well, anyway, after half a day of getting everything going, we finally got going. Okay, the guy with the shovel, we got him loaded up, and he got out of the woods. The next truck, we got him loaded. His truck caught on fire.
Caught on fire?
Yes. And the third truck, are you familiar, you know, the 40-foot trailers, you know, vans?
Oh, I've seen them.
Yeah, okay. The third truck, he's halfway up the hill, and the trailer broke in half.
Well, that's beyond the pale. At that point, you've got to decide this was not a project to be.
Well, that's what happened, Art.
Did you cease?
We finished the job. It was quite expensive, but...
You finished the job?
Yes, sir.
How's life been?
Oh, well, it's been all right. Like I said, it's... Art, I'd like to thank you for many, many, many years of outstanding radio programs.
Okay, well, thank you very much,
and
sir.
I'll miss you. Bye.
Take care. All right, now, the rules are not to do that. Not tonight. It's just ghost to ghost. I appreciate the sentiments, but... As I said, I'm not easy. I'm not good on goodbyes, so I appreciate it. But only ghost stories this night. Only ghost stories. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Art?
Yes.
This is Josie from Rhode Island.
Hi, Josie. How's Rhode Island this morning? Well, it's pretty late there, huh? Early, actually.
Yeah, it's almost 4:30.
Right.
I had the strangest occurrence happen to me about a week and a half ago.
Yes.
I was listening to your program, and I fell asleep on the couch. And then when I woke up, I realized your program was all through. So I got up, went to shut the radio off, and it was totally off.
You mean it wasn't on?
It wasn't on. The radio was completely off.
You mean you were hearing my show without the radio?
Well, I had fallen asleep, you know, while I was listening to it.
Yes.
The radio was on.
Yes.
And then when I dozed off for a while, and then when I woke up, your program was already off.
And the radio was actually physically off.
It was physically off.
I didn't have a sleep timer on or anything?
Nothing. There's nothing. It doesn't have a sleep timer. It's just a regular radio. And I looked at it. I said, this is weird. I turned the on button. You know, I put it on. It went on. And then I shut it back off again. It was totally off. I just couldn't believe it. I looked at it and I was just staring at it, and I'm saying, what happened?
Well, when it's my program, you never know.
But you weren't on that night. It was that man that's going to take over. Was it Mike Siegel?
Mike Siegel.
It was him that was on that night.
Same program, though.
Yeah, same program. But he was on that night. And I couldn't believe when I went to the radio, it was totally, I said, what in the world? I was just in shock. I said, you know, who shut this off?
I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know. I can't, you know, I don't understand it. And
well, there are a lot of things in life we don't.
I know.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, goodbye.
You take care back there. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Mr. Bell. This is Cheryl in Sumner, Washington.
Welcome.
I have sort of an Amityville tale.
An Amityville tale?
Yes, sort of. About 15 years ago, my husband and Ben and my two teenage daughters, we moved from California to Dodge City, Kansas, and my sister and her husband was already living there. And, of course, we needed a house, and she went out house hunting with me, and we found this really precious old two-story refurbished house.
Well, I'll tell you, Dodge City's kind of an eerie place.
Yes,
anyway.
It is. And, I wish I had time to tell you all the eerie stories that happened to us there, but I'm only allowed one story. But I have some doozies. Anyway, so believe it or not, the house was on Elm Street. So, I mean, that should have told us something then, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but it was just an adorable place. So we called the realtor, and he showed us the house. And my sister is psychic, by the way. And, I mean, she astral travels out of her body and everything. But both of us had sort of a funny feeling when he showed us the house. But we didn't want to say anything to each other. We just kind of, you know, we thought, well, maybe it means nothing, you know. And the house was just adorable. It just, they had completely refurbished it, and it was just darling. Anyway, so we went ahead and moved in, and it had the two bedrooms downstairs and a sunroom and the living room, dining room and kitchen. And then upstairs was a bedroom, like an office room, and another small bathroom. And we'd only been there about a week, and things just started happening, just Amityville-type stuff.
Like what?
Oh, God. We would wake up in the middle of the night, and there'd be water running, and we'd go downstairs, and the kitchen sink, the water would be filling up in the sink, and our whole kitchen was flooded with water. There'd be black stuff in the downstairs toilet.
Black stuff?
Black stuff. My daughter in one of the bedrooms, she would tell me she didn't want to sleep in there anymore because there was a lady with a black dress that sat on the end of her bed, and she didn't want to be in
a black dress.
Like you know the old fashioned black dresses, the long sleeves with the little lace collars, and you know like the old you know like in the cowboy days.
Listen, I'll tell you what, I've got a break coming up. You hold on, all right?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Amity, this does actually sound like Amityville. A woman in a black dress. I'm going to have to think about that a little bit.
Sweet dreams are made of the end. Who am I to disagree? I travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to get.
I surely do remember the Amityville house, and that house, by the way, I believe stands unoccupied today. You're back on the air again.
Yes, sir.
There was your long, cool woman in black dress.
I like that. I wish I had time to tell you all the amazing things, but I'm just going to try and touch on what I can.
Black in the toilet, that's bad.
Black in the toilet's bad, but it gets worse. I mean, like I said, there was this lady that always appeared in my one daughter's bedroom, and she never did anything. She just sat there on the bed. And then across the hall was my other daughter's bedroom, And she was one that liked a little bit of light on in the hallway. And she'd wake up in the middle of the night, and her door was shut, and she couldn't get out her door. And she'd bang on her door screaming. And my husband and I slept upstairs, so I'd have to come down and try to get her door open. Finally, we started stacking bricks and books and stuff in front of her door so it wouldn't close at night. And then, but still, those would be moving, and a door would shut. Okay, I would take a bath downstairs. Someone would come in behind me and start whispering to me. Upstairs in the bedroom, in the middle of the night, I'd wake up, and my husband's face would look like an old woman's face.
Oh, no.
In the upstairs bathroom, it was just like, it just had a shower and a sink and a toilet. And in the middle of the night, we'd wake up, and there'd be water squirting out of the sink like a waterfall, and there'd be water in the hallway. Let me think. Our washer and dryer was down in the basement. So my daughters and I, we'd go in the basement and do the laundry, and the door would shut and lock us in there. And obviously we stopped doing any of that at nighttime because the lights started going off at night, and then we'd be locked in the basement with the lights off. Then we tried burning candles, and then they'd be, so we didn't do any laundry at night anymore. And
what'd you do with this house?
Oh, well, we only lived there about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months maybe. My daughters and my sister's children, they went to the Catholic school around the corner. There was a Catholic church there. And finally it started getting really bad. Just horrible things kept happening. My husband was a trucker, and he'd leave like at 2 or 3 in the morning. And I would start hearing someone walking up and down the stairs, coming up and down the stairs. Finally, I would have him wake me up, and he'd take me downstairs, and I'd sleep in the sunroom because it was the only, what I called the clean room, you know, that was the safest room. My daughters started spending the night at their friends a lot. There would be a form that would be, now this house had all new everything in it, new carpet and everything, and there'd be this form that looked like a person laying in a fetal position, and there'd be a black stain on the carpet, and then it would go away. Finally, my sister and I couldn't take it anymore, so we went to the Hall of Records, and we checked out the house, and we found out that the lady had bought the house, and she'd refurbished it. I won't give any names here, of course. That wouldn't be right.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. And she had bought the house from, it was the estate of the people that sold the house of the old woman that lived there. And her husband had died in the house, and the son, I guess the son had been found on the living room floor in that position. The husband had something wrong with his leg, and he'd walk funny, so I guess that's the sound we'd hear on the stairs. And the old woman, she went to the Catholic church, and she finally stopped going, and they came over to check on her, and she had become, I mean, she wouldn't even leave the house, and they finally had to drag her out of there and put her in a home, and she kept screaming and saying that no, she would die in her house, and she didn't want to leave it. Well, they would put her in a posy, you know, at the old folks' home, and she'd get out of that, and she was always trying to escape. Anyway, she finally passed away. So anyway, when we checked the records of what we came up with, we felt like there was some sort of an evil in the house, but the old woman was somehow, I don't know, either the force or whatever it was pulled her there, and her soul couldn't go to the light, and so she was like earthbound in this house.
Gotcha.
So then we went and got the priest over at the church, and he came to bless the house.
Well, this really is Amityville.
Do I still have time?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, so we had 2 cats and 2 dogs. They wouldn't go upstairs. So the priest came. He came in the house. He went upstairs. He started sweating real bad. He started becoming real ill. He said, and so he blessed the house as good as he could. He said he had to leave. Anyway, he had to serve Mass later that afternoon, and he fainted at Mass, and became real ill for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then when we go to Mass, he wouldn't talk to us. And so finally, we started blessing the house ourselves, and I believe that we finally sent the old woman to the light, and her grave settled. We had heard that when there's still a mound over the grave and it hasn't settled, that means the spirit's earthbound. We don't know if that's true or not, but anyway, the grave settled because we found her grave. And there was a baby that would cry, and it was just
believe me, I've got this picture graphically. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
And good night to you. Oh, my. Oh, my. Hey, Art. Since this is your last Coast to Ghost on Coast to Ghost, I thought I'd relate an interesting event that occurred several years ago. My friend's cousin lived in an old house in Trenton, New Jersey, that had been moved from Bordentown, New Jersey. It was previously used by Napoleon and his brother on visits to the area. Now, this story is not about Napoleon or his brother, but rather concerns the occupants of that house at around the same time. See, my friend's cousin had decided to remodel the house and appropriate the attic as a bedroom for their daughter. As her husband began the remodel, a series of peculiar incidents also began. This is sure sounding familiar. They included bedroom drawers being emptied and contents strewn about, cold spots in the home, and her husband being pushed down the attic steps. As we are particularly sensitive to ghostly activities, she called us to please come over and see if we could determine what or who could be causing these frightening actions. Arriving at her home, we proceeded to the attic, where I saw a young girl about 14 or 15 curled up in a corner. She seemed very distraught. During our dialogue, I asked her what was upsetting her, and she replied, "I've lost my ring. It's very special to me. And what is going to happen to me," she said, "he's giving my room to someone else." I assured her there was a better place for her, and before she was led to the light, I asked her name. "Sarah Cunningham," she replied. I related what Sarah had told me to my friend's cousin, who immediately turned a ghastly white and quickly left the room to retrieve something from her kitchen. "I found this morning," she said. I don't know where it came from or who it belongs to, and handed me a beautiful azimuth ring about size 5 that she'd found in the kitchen faucets. I examined the ring and inside found the initials S.C. Note, the house was also part of the tunnels that Napoleon had constructed to aid his escape in the event it was needed. An interesting article on the house ran in either the Trenton Times or the Trentonian at the time the house was moved from Bordentown to its present location. I have a photocopy of the article, but it's very poor and not scannable. Cheerio, Barb in Pennsylvania. Thanks, Barb. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, this is Travis in Quartz Hill.
Hi, Travis.
Calling to, I'm a ride mechanic at a local amusement park down here in Southern Cal. And I just want to tell you a ghost story about one of our rides.
Fire away.
Some years ago, there was one of the mechanics that worked there. I guess it was his, like, pet ride. And consequently, he had died, not at the park, but he suffered a heart attack at his home.
What kind of ride was it?
It's a big wooden roller coaster.
Right, okay. Oh, yes, yes, I remember those.
So, one of our electricians, I guess, it must have been about a year later, was walking out to check the track at night. And he was checking proximity switches. I'm sure you're familiar with what those are.
Sure.
He's checking the proximity switches down in between the tracks, and he looked up, and here comes the guy who had died. Said that he checked all the switches at the trims, and you're good to go.
Really?
Yeah, and then I guess the electrician ran, and nobody's ever seen him physically, but there's been a few of us who have seen, the glow of a cigarette out on the track area.
Yeah.
And he was very well known for chain smoking.
Good to go, huh?
Oh, yeah. He said he's checking out his ride still.
I hear you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Take care. There you have it again. The same theme again and again. People that seem bound to earth. God, the question, is it their soul? Is it their consciousness? Is it really them? It sure would seem so. And again, I know that in our own minds, we make, make it right by thinking that time is different on the other side and that you can be in two places at one time, but maybe you can't. It's got to be at least an equal possibility, and it's pretty sobering to consider. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
How do you do?
I do okay.
Wonderful. This happened, Vic, when I had first gotten married back in 1976 to my first wife.
Mm.
And we had gotten up and routinely, you know, it was my turn to make the coffee, I guess, so I got up. And I had one of those, you know, those old GE percolators?
Sure.
You know.
I have one of those.
You know how it is when you want to stand one of them things on end outside of itself, you know, the basket and all that? And it's,
you betcha.
Practically difficult, okay?
Yep.
So, hence the story. I had gotten up, it was my turn to make it, et cetera, et cetera. And I took the guts out and cleaned them and so forth and set them aside all in the rack to dry while I went and proceeded to clean the pot itself. So I got the pot cleaned out and rinsed out, and I filled it full of cold water, and I grabbed the coffee, and I went over to, you know, pick up the basket and stem and so forth, and they were gone.
Gone.
And, right. They were no longer in the, you know, the drainer basket.
Yes.
So I looked around. I looked on the table. I couldn't find them. I called my wife. She came in. I told her what had happened. And she's like, well, you know, where'd you set it? In the drainer. And she looked there. It's not there. She looked on the table. We proceeded to go through the whole house to find this thing. And we went back in the kitchen. And on the windowsill, standing, assembled, and ready to go in the pot minus the coffee.
Oh, no.
Yes, there it was. Bright, shiny, sparkling, clean, and balancing perfectly on a painted, you know, a rough painted windowsill. Oh, yeah. And this is one of those old houses in Chicago that was built back behind the local bar.
Yes.
Okay. And there had been stories about that place before we even moved in, but, you know, everything was pretty much benign up to that point. But we spent a good half hour looking for them guts, and finally we came back in, and after like the third or fourth time, we looked around, and there it was sitting, you know, gleaming in the sunlight, assembled and standing on end.
Well, it was a good act, but still in all, I don't know if I'd want to stick around.
Yeah, well, we didn't much after that, but
anything else like that ever happen?
Well, when I was much younger, living in my folks' house, I had been, we had just moved in about a year, and I was laying in bed one Saturday morning, and everybody was in the front room, and all of a sudden, I hear clank, clankety-clank, clankety-clank going across over my head. Okay.
Over your head?
Over my head, in the attic. Nobody lives in the attic, Art. Nothing's in the attic except a couple of old boxes. But here, it sounds like somebody's dragging a 20-pound chain.
Nothing human.
No, no. Whatever it was, we had to weigh a ton because of the way it was walking. And I went up there and looked, and of course, nothing. But this was early on a Saturday morning.
Well, you know. I don't know what to tell you, sir. I would just be very careful in life, that's all.
Yeah.
You take care.
You too.
Right. No, clunking with nobody living up there. And then the coffee maker. Well, maybe there is no linear time on the other side, and maybe that thing was just on the way to get coffee. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is India calling from Wisconsin.
How you doing?
Pretty okay. How about you?
All right.
Okay, well, I have to say, first of all, that my family, the women in my family have all had, you know, they're the ones that have, like, the metaphysical experiences and such.
Yes.
And so I guess I inherited that. So when I was about 13 or so, and I wasn't supposed to be out at night, but I was anyway. I was sleeping over at a friend's house.
I went down to, there's this park in town, you know, by an old, you know, by a lake, and it's surrounded, I mean, it's beautiful. It's surrounded by all these old mansions because where we live is like the biggest paper producing place in the world.
Yes.
So all the paper barons built their giant mansions over there.
Right.
And it's, I mean, it's serene down there. Probably the prettiest place I've ever been, but we went down there, and, you know, it's, at night it's a pretty creepy place to be. And all of a sudden, you know, I was talking to my friend, and there's a giant fountain there, and we were sitting by the fountain. And my friend says, you know, look over there. Do you see that? And I said, what? And she says, it looks like a horse. And, of course, there's no horses in the park. So I turned to look, and about that time, whatever it was, seemed to change into a lot of people that shouldn't have been at the park at that time.
And a lot of people?
Yeah, a lot of people, like 25 people walking straight towards us. And that about...
Did you originally... Wait a minute, hold it. Did you originally see this thing as a horse or a form or an animal?
Well, I looked over and I saw something and I thought, what is that? And it
morphed into 13 people or so or more?
Yeah, and they were walking towards us, but you couldn't see all of them. Some of them were shadows. But some of them you could see. But wait, this isn't the good part. I see this one guy and he's staring just at me. And so I think, you know, oh my God. So we run home and we don't tell anyone. But that's not the end of the story. I mean, I've had, you know, like I said, the women in my family have experiences like this. So I'd see, you know, I saw ghosts and I'd see all sorts of things. But I saw, one night I was up listening to you when I should have been in bed. And I was making a sandwich and in my kitchen. And we live in an old house. It must be 150 years old, maybe.
Right.
And I see out of the corner of my eye this, you know, this tall man, the same man I saw in the park, walking towards me. And that about scared me to death. So I stepped back and, you know, and then he was gone. So I just, you know, thought, I'll make the sandwich, eat the sandwich, and just forget about it. But, you know, it never occurred to me, you know, why any one ghost would be picking on me, right? So it was about a year later that I found out that I'm descended from, like, a line of Amish settlers that originally came over in the early 1700s.
Yeah.
And what had always struck me about this man that I'd seen was the way he was dressed. I always thought he was dressed like someone in the 1800s. You know, I don't know why, but then it struck me that he was dressed like an Amish person. And I had recently, in the last year, become interested in such things as, like, pagan topics and Wicca and stuff.
So it all hit you at once, really?
Yeah, because my family had gone back. They weren't Amish because they had strayed away from the faith and they'd become Methodists. But all the generations had been really religious. And I guess, I don't know, I am sure another generation might have strayed away, but I had just started, you know, I wasn't a Christian.
I've got you. Listen, I've got to run, but beautiful story. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
13-year-old girls. Boy, I'll tell you. They cause a lot of trouble, 13-year-old girls do. Frequently associated with paranormal occurrences. There's something about them. We'll be back.
Take a ride. Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Isn't it funny? Even in the last couple of days, I find yet another piece of bumper music to add to that which all seems to fit. Ain't it so? Well, here's one for the books. It comes from Nan, that's N-A-N, Nan, in San Francisco. Art, I tried to get pregnant with my daughter for 2.5 years. During that time, I became aware of a presence. A presence had followed me around at all times of the day and night. A small shadow would pass by me, a wisp past my cheek. The shadow did not touch the floor. It was small and was in the air, always at the same height, about 4 feet in the air. Not only was I aware of the presence, I was aware of its personality. Listen closely now. After a period of time, the consistency of its presence and its response to me led me to believe that it was female, my daughter, and stubborn. At one point, I remember asking out loud, "When are you going to show up?" The response was, as I thought in my mind, "When the time is right for me." Well, the upshot is that after 2.5 years of trying, I'd taken fertility drugs for 6 months and still wasn't pregnant. The entity was around almost all the time now. One day, my close friend and neighbor told me that she had a dream that I was pregnant. My husband and I met with a doctor to begin moving more aggressive fertility drugs into me, and I'd just about given up on just getting pregnant. As soon as I let go, bingo! The personality essence that I had experienced around me was inside me. I knew not only that I was pregnant with a girl, which was proven by amniocentesis, but I knew who she was. The other day, I was having a conversation with this 5.5-year-old that I knew well when she was born, and she began talking about heaven. Well, since we're agnostic, and I don't believe in traditional religious concepts of heaven and hell, I have not discussed this with her, and I asked her where heaven was, and she pointed up. I asked her how she knew about it, and she told me that it was where she waited while she was waiting to come into my body. She told me that she used to visit me before she was born, and that she didn't want to come right away when I wanted her to. She has at other times repeatedly told me that she chose to be with me, and that she has a strangely comforting ability about her, as though she's mothering me. I had a son before her, and nothing like this happened with him. Very unusual. That's Nan in San Francisco. Unusual, Nan? Yeah, I'll say. First-time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Roe from Midland, Texas.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well this morning. How about you?
All right.
I've recently moved to Midland from Austin. I lived in Austin for 30 years. I was a college professor and graphic designer, and I was head of the department of the local Institute of Higher Education there. Mm-hmm. This is in the late 80s. I had been going through a really bad patch in my life. My dog had died. I had lost 7 relatives, including my father,
It seems like it all comes at once, doesn't it?
It does. It comes, and when it hits the fan, it just spreads out in tandem.
Yep.
And my best friend had just stabbed me in the back, and we were going through political assassinations at the college, and I had just been demoted that day and put on double secret probation for something I hadn't done. And by the time I got home from work, I was feeling pretty bad.
Life stinks.
So I went in and took a long, hot bubble bath and came out and was sitting on the side of the bed, winding my clock, setting my alarm. And I was going, you know, my father had been a World War II veteran and in really bad fighting and an aerospace engineer and worked on the Apollo moonshot and gone into the oil business. And he was a pretty tough old bird, and he had been ill for a long time, dead on the arrival at the hospital 5 times and revived out of it, you know, miraculously. And he had finally passed on a month before. And so I was sitting there. He was a very wise and good man. And I was just thinking to myself, I was going, boy, Pop, I could really use your help right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really need you. And I suddenly felt this presence behind me on the other side of the bed and this weight go down on the bed.
Wow.
And I lived by myself with my dog before he died. So, the hair went up on the back of my neck. And I turned around, and there was my dad, just as 3D and as solid as he could possibly be, sitting there on the side of the bed looking at me.
The hair is going up on the back of my neck.
And he had this real stern look on his face, and I thought, oh, my God, he knows every bad thing I've ever done in my life now. And so I said, Dad, is that you? And he had this thing that he used to do when he was upset with you, and his eyelids would flutter and his eyes would roll in the back of his head, and all you could see were the whites of his eyes. And he started doing that, like, you idiot. Can't you see me sitting here?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went across the bed, and I wrapped my arms around him, and he wrapped his arms around me, and he just hugged me very tight. And I was with him like that for about 30 minutes. He never said a word. I never said another word. I went to sleep with my head on my father's chest. And when I woke up the next morning, he was gone. And I had been tucked into bed, and here I was, like, 38 years old. I had been tucked into bed, and the covers had been pulled up over me where the covers hadn't even been turned down.
Wow. I don't even know what to say to that.
I would say that's pretty fine.
Yeah, pretty fine. And better than some of the rest I've been hearing this morning in terms of what seems to happen to us.
Well, you know, there's. It depends upon where your consciousness is. If you're afraid of, I've been one of those kids that when I came through, I never lost that ability to see things. And you name it, just about everything that's been on your show, I have experienced in my lifetime.
Well, that's a lot, but that one, we're gonna have a hard time beating that. Thank you, dear.
You have a good one.
Take care. Oh, brother. Feel the bed depress, and you turn around, and there's your father in full physical form, and you fall asleep with him. Dear Art, here's a ghost story from when I was a little girl. This comes from a Chinese camp. It says a Chinese camp. When I was 7 years old, I went to stay overnight with my aunt in her small house in Chinese Camp, California. Okay, Chinese Camp, California. The town is where all of the Chinese miners were sequestered during the gold rush near Table Mountain. I'd never been there before, and as I was young, I didn't really know about the history of the house. According to my aunt, the guest bedroom was very haunted. On one occasion, a guest of hers woke crying uncontrollably in the room. When my aunt asked her what was the matter. She replied she couldn't sleep because there was a woman standing over her and wouldn't go away. My aunt saw nothing. This was the room I was to sleep in. After tucking me into bed, my aunt and uncle retired to their bedroom to sleep. Later in the night, I awoke in the room feeling somewhat uneasy. Suddenly, without warning, I was shoved very roughly from the bed onto the floor. I was startled and disoriented. I headed toward the area where I thought the door would be, but I couldn't find it. I became even more frightened, as I couldn't find the way out and didn't want to look back at what had shoved me out of bed. Don't blame me a bit. I became so scared that I started crying and threw myself against the wall. My aunt heard my cries and found me, a scared, crumpled little girl, trying to claw through the wall. Needless to say, I slept in her bed for the rest of that night. It was not until I was older that I learned the original owner of the house, an unhappy old woman, had hung herself in the attic. The steps to the attic had been walled off. Naturally, the guest bedroom was where the door to the attic used to be. That's Amy S. in Santa Cruz. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Trevor from Saskatoon.
How you doing?
And I'm in the haunted hotel.
The haunted hotel.
A haunted hotel. This thing is about, the building's about, it was built in the 1900s when this city was just a town at the time.
Huh.
It took probably like 10 minutes to cross, but it was one of the best ones at the time.
What kind of haunting?
You name it. I got thumps. I got... I'll give you an example of the history of the place first. It'd be the best way to describe it. Going about from the 40s all the way to almost present day, except for about 6 years ago when the company that I work with took over the place. This building sat like dead for 5 years. But before that, in the pool area and the old theater area, which is it's about three stories high, like huge pool area, holds a big water slide, that used to be a double layer bar. And that place had hippies, bikers, natives, every class. So you can just imagine the fights. I guess the police used to keep the paddy wagon back there, toss the drunks and those who were fighting into the back, drive it over to the police station and come back.
Sure.
It was one of the roughest ones in the province. And, well, anyway, to this day, like, you'd be walking through the pool area or into what is now a TV area where an old lounge used to be.
Yes.
And you can hear music. You can hear, like, a giant party.
And how do you feel about living in a place like that?
I work here.
In a place like that?
I don't mind it. It's actually not too bad, considering some of the other stuff that goes on here. Like, you go through every once in a while, you hear music, and TV's off, there's no radios on,
mm-hmm.
and it's just, all of a sudden, you just cock your head a bit, and you can hear it real faint. And you try and find it, you'll never find it. People have come in, and, where's the bar? There's no bar. There is, so I can hear the music. There is no music, bud, and this is when I only had three people living here at the time.
Do you tell them what it is?
Every once in a while, depending on who they are. If they're really phlegm, then I tell them, it's just the ghosts, and they're, sure, and they leave. But I told one person once, my boss got mad at me.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, but this is where it gets really weird. Downstairs used to be an old pool hall, and that's where the security guards would go down there, and we'd have our smoke break. My one partner, he never believed me. He'd seen the elevator. It goes up to the fourth floor and comes down, and the doors open up by themselves and close. Open and close. And sit there, and they open and close maybe 2-3 times an hour. And it's still on the main floor, and there's no...
I heard a story just like that earlier.
And it gets better. So my partner, Ken, goes down the stairs, and he's having a cigarette, and he never believes me. Well, he's sitting there, and he's just having a cigarette and his coffee, and all of a sudden he feels this hand reach out and grab him on the shoulder and squeeze it, like, good job. Ken jumps, turns around, pulls out his Maglite flashlight, and it's ready to swing, and there's no one there. And now Ken's starting to believe me because he feels it again on the other shoulder. Whips around, and it's the wall. Ken just sits there, I'm just finishing my smoke, and I'm going to get out of here, and he finishes his cigarette and runs upstairs, and he tells me. Oh, I start laughing at him, and the next night...
I wouldn't have to be told twice that way.
Oh, yeah, they're actually quite the ones that we got are all nice ghosts. Like there's one in the kitchen. You go down there about, actually about 3 o'clock in the morning to about 4 o'clock in the morning, and you can smell fresh baked bread. The kitchen doesn't make that anymore. They haven't made it for a long time, and you can smell it. And fresh brewed coffee, and the cafe has been closed for... It closed at 7.
Well, all right, so
now.
What do you think that says about the nature of our souls and what happens to us when we physically die? I mean, what does that say?
I think what it is a psychic impression of the place, except for maybe a couple of them who are just don't realize they're dead, like or they've done something so awful they're forced to repeat it over and over and over again. Like upstairs on the roof, we found that there was a... In the 20s and 30s, a couple people had took a couple headers off the roof and killed themselves. Mm-hmm. We were up there watching a concert one night, and we're looking down, and I got great balance art. And I was sitting there, and I'm crouched down, and I'm looking at this, and I'm looking watching this concert, and next thing I know, all of a sudden, I'm falling off the damn, I'm being pushed. I'm reeling, and I called my partner over, and he comes running over, and all of a sudden I get pulled backwards, and Ken's still about 10, 15 feet away from me.
That was, oh.
And this is 4.5 stories up, and I was on the, like, literally almost on all fours when I got pushed. So there's no way I could, I accidentally tripped or anything. I wasn't moving. I was solidly planted.
Well, you must really like your job. That's
oh, I do. I've been here for 3 years. The one in the cafe, I asked her what her name was one day. Just on a Ouija board, and she spelt it out for me. I couldn't pronounce it, and she got mad at me, and the vacuum cleaner quit working for 3 days. Works in every other room except for the vacuum cleaner, except for in the cafe.
Yeah.
So I just call her G from now on. And I said, if you want me to call you anything, I'm just calling you G, and that's it, because I can't pronounce what you spelt out.
Well.
Let's see, we've had a couple deaths. And the one in the room.
You mean modern times?
Modern times, within the past couple of years. The one guy, he was a shaman. He used to live here, and he died because it's now like an apartment complex.
Yes.
And he died in one of the rooms. 2 weeks later, this one girl moved in, also a young native girl who's having lots of problems and stuff, and she moved right into the room less than 2 weeks after he died.
And?
She spent the next 3 months sleeping downstairs in the lobby.
I don't blame her a bit.
She had no idea. That's the thing, Art. No one told her.
I got to run. We're out of time. Thank you very much.
I know you can see me. Now here's a surprise. I know that you have, because there's magic in my eyes.
And I'll be watching.
I can see for miles and
oh, I'll tell you, this computer, it's really doing weird, weird stuff tonight. And I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised at all. When we talk of the things that we have talked of this night, strange things happen. It's like an invitation. Every time. Never fails. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, hello, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm a former Navy, and this is a story that happened to me when we were stationed in the Tonkin Gulf.
You were on a ship in the Tonkin Gulf?
Right. It was in 1973. My ship was the USS Savannah AOR-4.
Savannah, all right.
And we had been on station in the Tonkin for 7 months. By now, we were used to the routine, destroyers, two light cruisers, aircraft carriers, and some radio platforms would come alongside almost every day. Morning. I'm trying to read my notes here. Morning and afternoon. We were constantly moving fuel, ordnance, and food. I normally worked in the fire room, but my underway replenishment station was number 9. I was the valve man. At those hours, I would sit on my 18-inch fuel pipe with a set of sound-powered phones waiting for orders to open or close my fuel valve, and I did so thousands of times, never moving from my station during an evolution. This day was a little different. We completed refueling a destroyer. The fuel hoses were retracted, purged, and hung from the distanchions over our heads. Mm-hmm. About 500 feet of 10-inch high-pressure rubber hose and aluminum saddles swung gently as the crew of Station Number 9 cleaned up and stowed our gear to return to normal modified cruising stations. I waited on my fuel pipe with my butt, with my back to the bulkhead, listening to the sound-powered phones. Then, someone placed their hand firmly on my right shoulder and pressed. Quickly, I glanced to the right, and there was nothing. The hand disappeared. Of course, it would be nothing because there was a bulkhead there, too. I thought of my shipmates. I thought one of my shipmates was choosing this slack-timed horseplay. A minute passed, then again the hand pressed firmly. This time I quickly glanced to the left, expecting to catch the culprit. Nothing, no one there. The hand again disappeared. Two more minutes passed. I thought to myself that this was a mighty strange thing. If it happened again, I decided just to clear my mind and try to sense whoever it was or whatever it meant by this odd behavior. Just like clockwork, it happened again. Firmly, the hand pressed on my right shoulder, and there was no one there, but I felt a pleasant sensation. Accompanying the sensation was the idea, why not move? Just move over there, just about 8 feet away.
Right.
As if talking to someone, I said, okay, why not? I got up from my position and moved to the spot. I turned and looked at my station and said to myself, okay, so what now? 3 seconds later, one of the hose saddles cracked, one length of hose fell, then another and another. A saddle snapped until all the hose had fallen on station number 9. If I had been sitting in my position at that second, I would have been crushed into my helmet under a 1,000-pound pile of hose and aluminum saddles. Amazingly enough, not a man was injured in that accident. All the hoses, cabling, and saddles fell near, but not on anyone. We were there for 4 months. We had a few other accidents, but we had no casualties on my ship.
Brother.
And that's my ghost story.
That's a good one. All right, my friend, I thank you, and I'm glad you weren't crushed.
Yeah.
You take care. That's an on-station story. Well, I don't know. What do you rack that one up to? An angel? Maybe a relative that's passed on? Somebody who's watching over you? I don't know. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Wildcard Line?
Yep.
All right. Hey, we were up at on the other side of Pahrump, up there on that Highway 375.
Yes.
And a bunch of guys had come into town and stuff that used to work up at the test site and down in New Mexico.
Are you in Pahrump?
No, I'm in Vegas.
You're in Vegas, all
yep.
right.
And we go up there on the other side of Pahrump and go fishing up there at Hay Meadows and Cold
Sure,
Creek.
We got a lot of test site workers, Area 51 workers. They live here.
Yep. Yeah, all up in that little area and stuff. And we always go over to the little alien and stuff. It's great listening
sure.
to their stories. But a bunch of those guys had come in, and some of them that worked down at by the Trinity site where they track the satellites up in orbit and stuff.
Yes.
They got those big cameras on the telescopes and everything.
Yes.
And we're sitting up there and we'd been camping. It was the second night, and the first night on the weekends, the radio stations that we listen to out of Utah, they don't do the replays of the Art Bell show. So we took some tapes up there and we let them listen to the one with Seth Shostak from Arecibo.
Yes.
And the one with Richard Hoagland talking about when Paul Doré said that the satellite, you know, was headed in towards Earth and stuff, that big hoax deal and everything.
Oh, yes.
And these guys got to talking about
the EQ Peg affair.
Right, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And we were letting them listen to those tapes and stuff, and they were kind of laughing. We had heard stuff before that they track stuff and that you don't hear about and stuff.
Right.
And as the night went on and stuff, up there they got a lot of warm springs, and the valley will be like the fog rolling in off of the San Francisco Bay.
Sure.
And as it started rolling in and everything, everybody kind of got quiet, and then the guys got kind of into a technical conversation and everything, talking about how close that they really are, and that hoax they figure came from somebody that used to work up there at the test site and knew that the you know, that that's how they had figured it out, that the satellites that passed by our solar system and stuff, that they went, you know how, remember the big wow signal that Seth Shostak was talking about?
Of course, yes.
They said that, you know, during that interview, he said that a lot of times they had got stuff, but nobody retrieved that information for 2 or 3 or 4 days. And they talked about how a satellite traveling past us at half the speed of light, if you looked at it 2 or 3 days later in that same spot, well, it might be 4 or 5 degrees off, so you wouldn't find it again. And they took a map, and they started putting these little pins up and everything, and they started laying out paper and showing us up in the stars where they had all those little, the big wow signal and some other good signals had come from that nobody had ever figured out.
And they were saying it was real?
Yeah, they said that there's 7 signals that, well, actually there's like a group of like 48 signals, but they translate into 7 patterns across the sky. Hmm. And from listening to that stuff on your show, I, you know, learned about the Doppler effect and how, and is what they did. All of them that were in within a certain radio frequencies, they used the same color pins on those and stuff.
I've got you. All right. Well, thank you very much for the story. We definitely live in a strange area here, where strange things, of course, go on just over the mountain range to the north and west of us here. Yep. It's a strange area. Now, that technically was not a ghost story, but it certainly was interesting. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, this is James from Florence, Alabama.
Hello, okay. James.
How are you doing?
Okay.
After I tell this, I probably won't be able to sleep for a couple of days.
Well, try and tell it gently.
Okay. Well, when I was about 15 or 16, I went to bed one night, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up from a sound sleep, and I had that feeling like I was being watched.
I know the feeling.
And trying to shake myself out of sleep and everything, I just kind of glanced down to the foot of my bed, and I saw a pair of red eyes.
Red eyes.
They were about a foot and a half above the end of
the end of your bed?
The end of my bed. And as I first thought I was dreaming or hallucinating or whatever, and I glanced over at my alarm clock, and of course it said like 3 o'clock in the morning. So then I thought, okay, I'm awake. Okay, this is really happening. And I tried to scream, and of course nothing came out.
Oh, listen, that'd be the equivalent of about 10 cups of coffee.
Exactly, you know. I tried to move, and I couldn't move. And I kept thinking, okay, now what am I going to do?
Right.
So, and there's a formation with the eyes. The black entity itself looked kind of like a, the best way I can describe it would be like a miniature funnel cloud.
Oh, brother, a miniature funnel cloud.
And the eyes were stationary, though. And this whole thing was like just spinning, like, you know. And so I kept looking over at my clock, and like 3 or 4 minutes had gone by, and it was just in one, it's just in one place. It wasn't moving around or anything. And then I finally thought, okay, I know this is real. Now what do I do?
Well, you know you've got a good heart.
Well, yeah, really. And it was about, I had about 5 feet between my bed and my bedroom door. And I was thinking, okay, now I can actually get off this bed before this thing gets me, because I thought, you know, I just had this feeling that I was in trouble. And,
yeah, you were in trouble, all right.
And so, as a matter of fact, I looked over at my clock again. It said 10 after 3. And it started to come around the corner of the bed.
Aye, aye, aye.
And as soon as it did, I hit the floor running. I went straight to my mom's room, got her out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, I mean, I was frantic, you know, I was panicking and everything. And she was like, what? And I was trying to tell her what was going on. I just said, come on. We got back in the room, she turned on the light. Well, nothing was there.
I mean, you were going to take your mom into this black swirling entity with red glowing eyes?
Exactly.
Come on, Mom, you got to see this.
Yeah, I mean, I was, I mean, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just in my head. you know, I mean, I knew it wasn't, but I wanted somebody to verify this.
Yeah, but what if your mom had turned into mangled little pieces of...
but anyway, that is...
what happened to you?
Well, she passed it off as it was just a nightmare or a dream.
Naturally.
And, of course, to this day, I swear that it happened, that it was real, and for days I could not sleep. Matter of fact, I didn't sleep in that room for a while.
I understand.
And to this day, Art, every time I tell that story, I don't care. It can be at noon, broad daylight. I still get scared.
Of course. It would scare me. And
like I said, I probably will not sleep for a day or two now.
Well, good luck to you, and thank you for reaching out and touching us with that.
Thank you, Art.
we won't sleep either. Oh, brother. A black swirling entity with stationary red glowing eyes. Right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Will in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada.
All right, way up there.
Yeah, listening to you on Real Audio.
Yes, sir.
And I've got a story that my aunt told me about 5 years ago. Okay?
Okay.
And what happened was, she lives in Ontario, and she lives with her husband and her son. And she went to bed pretty late, about 11 o'clock, and she fell asleep, or she got into that weird part of sleep where you're not sure if you're asleep or you're awake, you know?
Yes.
And she heard somebody...
It's like the twilight zone of sleep.
Like the twilight zone of sleep. And she heard somebody in the basement, and her husband was really asleep, my uncle. So she decided just to walk downstairs and take a look. And she got down to the bottom of the stairs, and there was a man standing in the basement. And he was dressed up as a magician.
Really?
Really. With top hat, tuxedo, whole nine yards, wand, okay? Yeah, that's what I said. And the magician said, they're both asleep, meaning her son and her husband, and I'm going to kill you.
Oh, my God.
And he pulled out this huge butcher knife.
Oh, my God.
And began to chase her throughout the house. And as soon as she got back to her bed... She woke up, and he wasn't there. And she yelled at her husband to go and check this out or whatever, and he went downstairs and looked all around and searched the whole house, and there was no sign of anybody. Okay?
Okay.
So after several hours of laying there, sleepless because she was so terrified, finally she gets back to sleep. And as soon as she gets to sleep, she hears the same noise. And this time the magician is in her room right next to the bed. The magician says to her, when Brian went and looked downstairs, he didn't check by the furnace, and I was hiding in the heating vent.
Okay.
Now I'm going to kill you. The exact same thing again. So she wakes up out of her sleep again and has her husband go down and check out in the furnace, and there's nobody there. And she falls asleep, and the same thing happens again. So finally, they make it through the night, and they're all right. And she goes to work the next day, and she works making bulletproof vests. Here in Canada?
Yes.
And her best friend works with her. She got to work and she saw that her best friend was extremely tired looking. And she said, well, what's wrong with you? You look like you haven't got any sleep. And she said, oh, my husband couldn't sleep at all last night. He kept waking up every 5 minutes. He kept having this dream that he was in your basement dressed up as a magician and he was trying to kill you.
You lie.
I don't lie.
That's really the truth?
That is the honest to God's truth, Art. It's the freakiest story I've ever heard.
Oh, my Lord.
And maybe it doesn't qualify as a ghost story.
Oh, yes, it qualifies
does
just
it?
Fine, yes.
Okay, great.
Now, that's one... I wonder if that was a projection from him to her, or if it was simply a mutual... a real mutual experience.
Well, there was some connection between the two of them, obviously. It was pretty terrifying for two people to have the exact same experience, the exact same dream in two different houses.
I mean, what you just told is so good that it almost sounds like an urban legend.
Well, look, she'll swear on a stack of Bibles.
A stack of Bibles, huh?
She'll swear on a stack of Bibles. I won't because I'm agnostic, but if she will, that's good enough.
Well, I have no idea what to tell you about all of this, except that I guess you have no... You really believe it, right?
oh, Art, you have to consider the source. And I'm considering the source, and she's very believable. And she would not tell a lie, and the story just absolutely terrifies me. It terrifies me more because I've actually been in the furnace room.
Moreover, I would be afraid to go back to sleep. I don't know how anybody would get back to sleep after something like that.
Well, when you got to wake up early, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, I guess life goes on, huh?
It has to.
All right, listen, my friend. My program is over. And so you get the honors from Canada.
Well, as the last caller ever on Ghost to Ghost AM from Canada.
It's true.
Good night.
That's the way to do it.
Thank you.
Hey.
Hey.
Later. All right, indeed, the last caller ever on my version of Ghost to Ghost AM. And that's it for tonight. Now, tomorrow night, folks, Dr. Michio Kaku will be here. There'll be, a few surprises perhaps in the first hour. And then comes probably one of the best guests I've ever had on the radio, Dr. Michio Kaku. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Sleep tight.